to the October 8th, 2007 meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present. And we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. I'd like to dedicate it tonight to a very wonderful man, Stan Thompson, who left us last week. And I think we all know his smile and his wonderful articles. And so please keep him in your thoughts during the moment of silence. Thank you. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance tonight is Kathy Albach.
Place your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Kathy's going to tell us, this is our Shop Local campaign going on. Kathy's going to tell us a little bit about her business, Seawind Gallery.
Hi, good evening to one and all. I'm here tonight to talk about Seawind Gallery, custom picture framing and art. I'm local in Morro Bay for 20 years now, established in business for 16 years. I recently relocated to Morro Bay Boulevard, 245, right at the very end of Morro Bay Boulevard. And I'm actually expanding my gallery. I'm trying to gather local photographers together to have a co-op, and there's a special shop that will be specifically dedicated to photographers. And if anyone is interested, please give me a call at Seawind Gallery. And my name is Kathy, and the phone number is 772-5808.
Thank you.
Any questions? Feel free to ask.
Thanks, Kathy. Okay, announcements. One thing I wanted to announce, this came up at our Slow Cog meeting, is it's Rideshare Week, October 15th to 19th. And the challenge is to bike, walk, take the bus, share the ride, and use the money you save to feed people and not your car. And in order to get some incentive going, if you do, go on to their website, which I'm looking for here, the trip link, and it's with Rideshare. And there's all kinds of prizes that they're offering if you sign up to share your rides, including round-trip Amtrak tickets, two-night stay at the Crown Plaza, a Visa card, an iPod, all kinds of really neat stuff. So I would suggest you go there, and it's at rideshare.org. And you can go from there and find out about the Share the Ride Week. I think that was the only announcement that I had. Betty?
I'd like to make the announcement about the library meeting in Atascadero. Maybe some of you got this in the mail. The community is invited. It's not just for public officials. And it's going to be November 3rd up at the Atascadero Pavilion at the lake. And it's a way of promoting and figuring out how to enhance our libraries. And I'm sure Friends of the Library will be there as well. So I'll make the announcement again as the date gets closer. But for right now, it's November 3rd. It's from 9:30 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. It's a Saturday.
Is offering free tattoo removals for people that are interested in leaving the gang affiliation and becoming true men and living life on their own and instead of leaning on gangs for their for what they need. Anyway, those tattoo removals are done through the EOC, just so you know, as are the teen mammograms and the senior health screening. I think that's it for now. Thanks.
Melody?
Yeah, I guess I'll cover the meeting with Dynegy, the West Coast manager of Dynegy, and Randy Hickok, who used to be affiliated with our local group with the Morro Bay Power Plant, came and met with that liaison committee that was appointed by the council. And Bill was there, and so he can check me if I say anything wrong. But they were quite congenial, quite cooperative. We've got some innovative ideas for them. We presented them the New Futures Report. They accepted it. We said that we're only trying to work with them to see what kind of future use we can come to down there. And a couple of members of the New Futures Committee are organizing an article about the meeting and some of the considerations that are ahead of Dynegy and the city. And we hope to have that out in the Bay News in the next couple of weeks and to just explain it all. The other thing, I wanted to remind people of that public hearing on the sewer rates. It's November 13th.
12th.
12th.
13th? It's a got changed?
It's a Tuesday night, I believe. Microphone.
Oh, the 12th is a holiday, so
oh,
the 13th is
oh,
a
that's
Sunday.
Right.
Okay,
Veterans
gotcha.
Day. So it'll be on Tuesday night right here at the Vets Hall, and I believe we're starting at 7? 7, sounds good. And so we've been getting lots of letters, and so if you can't make it to the meeting, certainly get these letters. I'm collecting them all, reading them all, many of them from senior members of our and low-income members of our community who are scared to death of these new rates. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was this box. This is one of those little to-go boxes that you get at restaurants. In fact, I've been holding on to it, so it's got a little bit of my hamburger in there. This is from Beach House Bistro, which is a nice little restaurant in North Morro Bay up in the Lolo's range. And this is not styrofoam, and it's not paper. It's a reuse of sugar cane that has already been processed to create sugar. These can't be recycled, thrown into your recycling bin, but they can be thrown into your worm bin, which I have, your compost. They can also be just thrown in the trash because these things will biodegrade, whereas your styrofoam boxes won't. I asked them at Beach House Bistro, well, do these cost more money? And she nodded. She says, yeah, we're paying a lot more money to have these to use, but she says, but it's the right thing to do for the planet. So I wanted to congratulate that restaurant in town for doing that. And that was about all.
Okay. On environmental issues, I also wanted to say I went out and got a bunch of compact fluorescent light bulbs to change out everything in my house. And the more I heard about them and investigated them, I realized that there's some things you can't use them for. So please don't put them in anything that is a sensor. No sensors and no dimmers. And no fans, no ceiling fans, because apparently the vibration is not good. So I just found that out, and I have to take them out of my ceiling fan. Here I was being so environmentally conscious. But anyway, so be careful with that. Look up on the website about the compact fluorescents. They're wonderful energy savers, but be careful. There are some uses they're not appropriate for yet. The other announcement that I just wanted to make is that Mr. Hendricks couldn't be with us tonight, so we are going to continue item C2. So if anyone was here to talk about that, you might want to just wait. We'll not be dealing with that this evening. Okay. Closed session report. Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, council went in closed session on two separate items. The first one was real property transactions. The property discussed was the Morro Dunes RV Park. The other item was personnel issues, the annual reviews of the city attorney and city manager. No action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act. The city council will go back in closed session after the open session to discuss these items further.
Okay, our public comment period. I'd like to ask Bill Moram to come up first. He had some comments about Stan Thompson.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thank you, Betty, for calling me and giving me the opportunity to extol some of Stan's virtues. As you know, it was a big surprise. It was a shock, and it's still hard for me to really get my arms around the fact that Stan died last week, just about a week from ago, and he died of a massive heart attack, so he was dead before he hit the pavement, which is just the way Stan would have, I think, wanted it. He had a very tidy life that way. And if we all have to check out, he did it just right. Stan was one of those very, very blessed individuals. He had a wonderful outlook on life. And to be a journalist with that kind of outlook is really an oxymoron. He never met anybody he didn't like, and it's true. He was just like Will Rogers. He just loved everybody. This is the type of evening that Stan would have loved to have been sitting out on his deck sipping a glass of wine, enjoying all the virtues of Morro Bay, and we'll miss him dearly, and I want to just thank you very much for the opportunity. Thanks.
I think it's called a celebration, and I thought that was absolutely perfect for Stan because he celebrated every day.
Yeah, he was quite the guy. Yeah. We'll miss
also
him.
A wonderful photographer. Wonderful photographer.
One of the best. You know, even David Middlecamp and the photographers at the Tribune would actually study his photos and go, now how in the heck did he do that? Because
amazing.
That's high praise. That really is. Because they're such excellent photographers. So thank you very much for
thank
your time.
Thank you, Bill. Okay. Now we'll open the rest of the public comment.
Good evening, Council, Mayor and Council members. My name is Linda Merrill, and I live in Morro Bay. I attended the workshop a couple of Saturdays ago, the planning workshop, and my husband and I watched it on television, and we were so impressed that we wrote you something regarding that. New buildings that are too big and out of scale are changing the small town or village character of our city. While most everyone is wringing hands and wondering what to do, Dr. Teff stepped forward at the last city planning workshop with some really excellent and well-thought-out solutions. Dr. Teff perfectly defined the problem as one of buildings with too much bulk and scale. He researched the question intensively, and he suggested solutions based on changes to our city ordinances that are both beautifully simple and easy to implement. Additionally, Dr. Teft showed us how our current planning ordinances are actually encouraging big box designs. Happily, he also showed how his suggested ordinance changes would not only promote more friendly neighborhoods, but superior architectural designs. Implementing Dr. Teft's ideas are the classic win-win situation. After all, everyone who runs for office here says that they are for preserving our small town character. Now, Dr. Teff has presented you all with a way to do just that. Now I ask you, council members, to begin the process of making it all happen. An opportunity like this may not come again. And last, my hat's off to Dr. Teft, as I can only imagine the time he has spent on this. His presentation at the workshop would be a credit to any city planner. Thank you all for considering acting on his requests. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Sadowski, citizen, North Morro Bay. I'm a wastewater collection system operator, grade 4 by profession, and also a fluid dynamics test ops engineer by profession. As you know, we are very concerned about the conditions of our wastewater collection system. We understand that the city is going to start addressing this soon, and we have a lot of respect for the person who will be in charge of that work, and that's Mr. Dylan Wade. However, we believe that the 3-year timeline the city has set for the project is too long. There is sewage leaking into the ground all over the city, and we need to move quickly and get the problem under control. Recently, I reviewed a sample of videotape inspections that were done at various lines in the collection system. We also reviewed some of the written logs of other inspections. Overall, the tapes and the logs were looked at cover a lot of the areas in the city, including downtown, Lower Morro Heights, Beach Track, several sections of North Morro Bay, east of the highway, a section of Atascadero Road, and major portions of the Main Street trunk line. We have found that the conditions even worse than expected. In just 3.29 miles of lines we studied, there were hundreds of openings and pipes, offset joints, separated joints, cracks, and holes. As we mentioned in the earlier report, openings in the pipes permit infiltration of water into the system in wet conditions, exfiltration of raw sewage into the soil when the soil surrounding the lines is dry. The pipe damage we encountered make it clear that the serious pollution of our soil by untreated sewage is going on all over the city. In addition, Morro Bay is paying for the processing. When I say a major break, that's a break that is basically almost all the contents at medium flow is going outside the pipe.
Okay, we need you to conclude.
Oh, okay. In conclusion, we have provided you with a detailed report that contains our specific recommendations for action. We'll be providing that to you later.
Thank you.
Suggestions sourced that might be able to provide extra funding we need to move forward to fix this quickly.
Thank you. Okay.
Good evening, Marla Jo Bruton, North Morro Bay, and I'm one of the three citizens that viewed the tapes of the video, condition of the video in Morro Bay, and I'd like to just pick up where Richard left off. Okay, in some cases, more than one kind of defect can occur at a single joint, like an offset and a separation. However, even when we account for the fact that in some joints there are both offset and separation, we still have, on average, a defective joint every 10.5 feet. Every 10.5 feet, on average, we have the potential for, depending upon the conditions, inflow and infiltration and or exfiltration, the leakage of raw sewage into the soil. And this is just counting the first two types of defects that you see in this table here. We found similar problems when we reviewed the city logs for an additional 1.89 miles of lines. In 9,991 feet of line covered by the logs, joint problems totaled 498. Meaning that on the average, there's a joint opening every 20.63 feet. Every 20.63 feet, on average, we have the potential for, depending upon the conditions, inflow and infiltration and or exfiltration, the leakage of raw sewage into the soil. Again, this does not include all of the problems, just the defective joints. And there is another reason we think the picture is worse than these contractor logs indicate. We do not believe that these logs include all of the damage that the corresponding tapes reveal, and that if they did, the figures would be similar to those we arrived at for the tapes we reviewed and independently logged. So as you can see, the situation is extremely serious. Damage of this magnitude cannot wait for 3 years. We need to move faster. The amount of pollution that could occur in the next 3 years is just too great. We need to find additional sources of funding and accelerate the repair of the system. We have provided you with a detailed report, we will provide you, that contains our specific recommendations for action and suggested sources that might be able to provide extra funding. We need to move forward and fix the problem quickly. We need to move forward as rapidly as possible to stop the serious pollution of our groundwater, our creeks, the bay, and the ocean. This is just a second. The North Morro Bay Beach Tract, and anyway, we'll be following up, and we have some really good suggestions for funding. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jim Nance, a permanent resident of Morro Bay, mayor and council. At one of the last city council meetings, I asked about low-income rates for sewer and water. The response from Mr. Schultz was that by state law, the city would have to subsidize any low-income rates. Now, isn't that what happened at the city council meeting last week for developers and contracts in regard to impact fees? If the mayor and council majority wants to subsidize special interests instead of helping people on fixed and low incomes, then how about at least not charging ratepayers for what they don't use? If a water and sewer ratepayer uses one or two HFC units, then they are charged for three units. So we have been subsidizing the larger users. I'd like to know how come. I think that if we're being conscious about conserving water, that we should be given an equal, you know, that should show up on our water bills.
That slogan. We also have burn support services. We have a family camp. We also have a new preschool camp outside of Sacramento we're starting this year. But our flagship is Champ Camp, where we bring up to 200 burn surviving children every year, and we try to build their motivation and try to go to a place where they don't have the stares or the questions from other people. This is all leading to, we're having a burn relay on Thursday, and we're taking all 18 fire departments, all 18 fire chiefs are supporting this. We're taking 18 fire departments to 16 schools, to 5,391 kids, and we're educating them. We're also stopping at all these different locations, also collecting donations. We're in partnership with KSBY, with Tony Coppola, and also Sherry Small. We're going to be here in Morro Bay at 11:50 on Thursday at Del Mar Elementary. We're going to have lunch with 460 kids. Then at 12:35, we're going to make a presentation with Sherry Small, and then we're going to bump up to Cayucas, and we're going to continue to Cambria, and then we're going to finish up at Farmers Market, Fire Prevention Night down at Farmers Market. I invite you guys, please come on down. I invite anyone to come on down, and anyone who wants to sponsor a child at camp, please contact the fire department, and we'll set you the right way to do that. I also want to talk about fire department news. I know I only got about a minute left, so I'll speak fast. Harbor Festival went great. For us, it was very minor injuries, and it went really well for us. October 7th through 13th, which is this week, is Fire Prevention Week, and please practice your escape plan. Identify escape routes, identify family meeting place outside, and practice it, please. Also, 65 reported home deaths result from fires in homes with no smoke detectors or working smoke detectors. If anyone needs to have their smoke detector checked in our community, please give us a call. We'll come on down, check your batteries, change your batteries, or even change your smoke detector for you. We'll take the engine down there and we'll do that. The Fire Department, Police Department, and Harbor Department, and Coast Guard, we're planning a public safety open house on November 18th from 11 to 3. We reserve City Park and a vacant fire station lot to accommodate this event. It's a pretty good event. We show our toys, we show what we do, and public can ask questions and how we do, and it's information time for us. And very important is that the bids for Fire Station 53 Phase 1 apparatus bays are going to be open 2 o'clock tomorrow, so we get to see what those bids look like. Thank you.
Thank you. I realized I forgot the fire department report. I was going to turn it over to you, so thank you for doing that. Is there anything else you want to say later? Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Gordon Willie, and I'm here to I'm a resident here in Morro Bay about 15 years, and I live at 2845 Ironwood, and I've seen a lot of the good things happen here in town, and I've seen some bad things, and one of the bad things is that our police officers seem to be leaving. We know why they're leaving. They can't afford to live here, and they can't afford to drive distances here because of the gasoline prices and things, and something has to be done to keep them here. Two of them will be leaving shortly, and we can't. These are well-trained officers. It takes almost a year to train an officer to take their place. Their lives depend on being well-trained, and our lives depend on them being well-trained. So I just encourage you to find some way to keep these officers in our city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Claire Grantham. I'm resident here of Morro Bay. I'm here to talk about a couple of things. First of all, the free flu shots at Sierra Vista. I want everyone to know they are free from 8 until 11 on Saturday, October 27th. And they will be giving free flu shots at Twin Cities that same day. I don't know what time. I think a little bit later. So everyone's welcome to come to that. But actually, I'm here to talk about the police department. I am a friend of our Morro Bay Police Department. And I want to remind you of the serious issues that are facing our police department. As Gordon just said, we've lost one officer to Cal Poly, and we have two more that are in the testing right now for other local agencies. And just to let you know, we are the lowest paid agency in the county, and it's really difficult to compete for not only new officers, but to keep the great officers we have. Our wages are 13% lower than the Grover Beach Police Department when they reached their new contract. I think it's not quite that much right now. And 17% lower than the next to the bottom agency, Arroyo Grande. 20% behind the median for the county. It's pretty pathetic. And approximately 30% behind the Sheriff's Department. In order to bring our agency up to the bottom of the other agencies, we would need to increase our salaries by 15%. Most of our officers do live out of town, so they have the additional large gas bills driving back and forth, $500-$600 a month. So now they're in the low.
I'd see him at parades and yell, "Hey, Stan!" He'd pause, look, and smile and wave at me. Once, my husband and I were at the edge of nowhere at a small town outside of Palm Springs, enjoying a hotel with hot water pools. And I looked up, and behold, there was Stan. Over the years, I would give him tips on interesting people and their hobbies that I had come across. One was on a local, teeny tiny, 80-year-old plus woman who was determined to experience parachuting out of an airplane before she died. Was he interested? You bet. I double-checked my facts with her this afternoon. He did not exactly go up with her on the plane, but he sure was there when she landed. Stan really contributed to our community over the years, weaving us a little bit closer with his insights and stories. I'm really going to miss him. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Bob Taft, Morro Bay resident. I'm here tonight to speak to you about item A6, the parking management plan. The draft parking management plan that has been presented to the city really has three huge deficiencies. It fails to address inappropriate siting of current parking facilities. We have along our Embarcadero five or six street ends, which are approximately the size of a lease site. This is some of the most valuable, most beautiful property, certainly in town and probably in the state, and we're using it for parking lots. This property could be used to provide amenities for pedestrians. It could provide information kiosks, pocket parks. It could provide craft booths. It could provide outdoor dining. It could provide outdoor entertainment venues. And it could provide reasons for people to come back to Morro Bay. We're using it for parking. Second issue that it fails to address is the fact that every single parking facility owned by the city is substandard. Not one of our lots meets code. Are we really so hypocritical that we say the private citizens have to meet code, but somehow the city doesn't? Okay, they're not landscaped, they're not screened, they're ugly. They give they provide a poor impression to people coming into our community because they don't meet code. And thirdly, and probably the most serious deficiency, is it endorses the exclusive use of in-lieu parking fees to fund parking improvements and expansion. This is an absolute killer to new business. This virtually ensures that business will stagnate in this town for the foreseeable future. In addition, it's discriminatory. It's not fair. New businesses are not the only ones who benefit from public parking. Okay, existing businesses benefit from it. The tourists benefit from it. The residents who park, many of whom park their cars on the street overnight, benefit from it. And yet the only group that's being asked to pay for it is new business. This is discriminatory, and it will never work because you're never going to have enough new businesses in town to fund the parking needs of the community. You can't jack up the in-lieu fees high enough to provide a substantial parking fund just taxing the new businesses. I would like to request that you pull this from the consent calendar, that you retain the $30,000 that you're spending on this study, and that you send the study back to the consultants and ask them to do it right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Richard Kleinhammer. I live in Cayucas. I submitted a letter earlier today to the City Council. I wanted to make sure you received it. Everyone received it. My objection is basically to the impact fees. I think it kind of explains here. I had a lot in Morro Bay I sold in 94 for $46,000. If you had an initial fee for $25,000 for permits, I mean, that's half the cost of the land. So, I mean, you know, you could see that'd be pretty high, almost ridiculous. I think that's pretty close to what they call an unconstitutional condition, whether you want to call it an exaction. I mean, I kind of explained it in the letter as far as what I think are unrelated costs in the report. I don't think they have anything to do with new impact of development. They may have to do with cost of services, but they seem completely unrelated to new development. It looks like you have $61 million in parks for 10,000 people, and you're also down here on the Embarcadero. This impact fee, I mean, to me, with the value of the lot that I sold in 94 and this price tag, I think it's just propaganda. I don't think it has anything to do with the impact of a new, you know, one new unit that's 1,500 square feet that your services provide $25,000 worth of services to that one home. I just don't think it's there.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Joan Solu. I'm here as a business person. 2 weeks ago, I came before you to address the issue of the increased development impact fees. You made your decision to increase the fees by a whopping 500%, a decision which I believe will come back and haunt you, especially in the area of commercial development. When I came before you, I stated that the increased fees would take my project price up $250,000. I now know that that number was incorrect. My information did not include the parking structure and did include a credit for existing rooms and parking. This is where my new problem lies. I was unable to find an area in the current staff report that addresses credits for current buildings per square foot. If you do not give a credit per square foot, you would be assessing the development twice. In the case of my property, any fees would have been paid at the time the original property was built, and then paid again when it was remodeled, and then paid again when it was added to. Different owners would have paid property taxes and bed taxes to the city and county, like I do. If you take away the credit for existing space, then you are essentially applying the unmannerly tactic of double dipping to suit your need. If you do double dip, the additional cost to my project alone will be approximately $300,000, or about $6,000 per room. So, I really think you should address the issue of double dipping. Will there or won't there be credits? We have been working on our project to make it great for the city for some time, and I would like to see the commencement date for the development impact fees be pushed back to January of 2008, as Councilman Pierce had suggested. This would allow people who in good faith began planning their projects, budgeting for their projects, and finding funding for their projects to go ahead and submit those projects without incurring the additional fees because they are already planned for and they already have financing. It would allow me to not have to go back to my financer and say, oops, guess what? I have a new problem. My city council wants me to find some more funding for their projects. Lastly, I would like to say that when I addressed you 2 weeks ago, I came up at the public comment period and was asked if I wanted to wait to speak later because development impact fees would be addressed as a public hearing item. And I was told that I would be given my time to speak. When time arrived, the citizens were given only 2 minutes each to speak because you said the agenda was full. There were only 17 of us. Giving us each an extra minute would have added up to an additional 17 minutes. I ask you, what could be more important to you than hearing from your citizens? Next time I get up to speak, please do not shorten my right to free speech. Or next time, when you're campaigning and you come knocking on my door, I will make you wait while I go get my egg timer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you're going to talk about the ships to reefs, that's a public hearing item.
I'm going to be speaking at a public comment period right now.
So you don't
there won't believe. Be there won't be any public comment on that item. Am I correct?
Yes, there will. It's a public hearing item.
Well, I think I'll just speak about it right now,
and then
so
you're
I can
leaving?
Get home to dinner. And I appreciate your tolerance.
And then you're leaving.
Is that a problem?
Well, if you're leaving, no. But if you were going to stay, then I would ask you to hold your comments.
Yeah, no, I'm going to leave after
okay.
that.
Okay.
Not that I wouldn't want to stay. I enjoy your company immensely.
I'm sure.
No, I thank you for bringing that to my attention. Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, and friends, Joey Ricciano with the Ocean Outfall Group. And, of course, you're going to be hearing item B1, and that's going to be a presentation that's going to basically tell you what a great idea it is for us to begin converting our nearshore environment into a marine landfill. Right now, if you scour the news and the different propagandas, you'll find people talking about ships to reefs. There's all these ships, then there's all these planes. There's a lot of planes in the desert right now, and they're looking to at Vallejo. And we were told that those ships were radioactive, that they had been used in the hydrogen bomb tests. I do know that they are being complained about up there, and I had attended some of these ships to reefs parodies. And they said that they were getting complaints. They had to move them. It costs too much for the Navy to do what they originally said they were going to do, send them back to Texas and have them dismantled and recycled. So what's the best thing to do? Approach cash-strapped municipalities like Morro Bay, who are likely to look twice at any scheme that might bring some revenue. Now, I know we need revenue, but this is not the right way. Basically, what we're talking about here is a place with a state marine reserve off the coast, a state marine reserve here in the estuary. It's everything we don't want. We don't want to continue the industrial uses here. We don't want to continue sapping our natural resources. What we want to do is make the switch into the 21st century, a clean, green future. We want to start bringing in the ecotourism dollars, expand your Winter Bird Festival, and stop looking at the ocean as a cheap dumping ground for the detritus of society. And I thank you for this opportunity to address you.
Thank you.
Jeff Gregory Construction. I'd like to voice another opinion on your development impact fees. First of all, a fellow developer you probably received an email from, and I would like to read that anyway because he is out of country. He says this in his email to me, we both implore you to postpone this huge increase in development fees for a minimum of 120 days. Somebody mentioned January 1st, which sounds more feasible to me. This increase is already going to create enough of a hardship on developers and builders as it is without possibly causing us to abort our current project that have been in with the planners for almost a year. Real estate sales are at an almost dead stop right now, and many of us do not feel it is smart to continue building when nothing is selling as it is, however. We are hoping to still go ahead if we can get our fees paid on the projects we have had before the Planning Commission over the past year. Otherwise, we will reconsider. We have been approached by other developers to join in legal proceedings against the City of Morro Bay and do not want to do this. And I'm going to stop that at that point. That's not my words, but that's another developer. There's another problem I have with the increased fees. I'm not sure that any of the other city or county entities include the garage square footage in their development fees. I know where I live in Tulare, Visalia, that all the counties I deal with do not include garages. You are including garages, I believe. Is that true? Garage square footages? No?
We can't respond while you're in public comment.
Okay.
We'll get to it when we get to
just smile, okay. My previous statement also remains the same. If you implement these fees, the seven projects I had planned for 2008 are going to be shelved. So I recalculated that possibility of about $84,000 in permit fees from just my small projects. will be zero for the city of Morro Bay next year if these impact fees are increased even at this whatever 500% rate. City Council has said that there's not enough money in the budget to pay all the city employees. It's very difficult to hire new ones and create the needs, but I believe that this decision is actually writing walking papers for many of the employees, because the developers, the contractors, they're not going to continue to pay these fees. If they're increased a little bit at a time over the next few years, that's a different story. But at this rate, that's exuberant, and I don't think they will. And I think that you're going to be signing in some future termination papers for some of our local employees. Also, I had another email that came to me by another business person in Morro Bay, and he said that I'll read it. I will be directly impacted by a 500% increase in development impact fees, having been directly involved in city planning and development for over 10 years in different – is that my time?
Yeah, that's your time.
Can I have my minute from that you stole from me last week?
Good try.
Hello, my name is Stanley Craig. I'm a lifetime resident of Morro Bay. In regards to the impact fees, I currently am finishing four houses just recently, and if those impact fees would have been applied to me, it would be marginal if I had been able to keep the properties. In the downturn of the market, that extra $100,000 I would have had to finance may have put me over the top and had to give those properties back to the bank. The time and
when we have that discussion. So
okay.
And what was the other one?
Well, I think one of them was alluding to the Harbor Walk, and I think that was paid for by another government entity.
Grants
from the Coastal Conservancy, right. I believe. And you can still drive out there and have a beautiful view. It brings it right
and
back
now you
in.
Can walk.
And we've also and made it possible to walk and ride bikes and walk your dog out there. I think the question I had was, perhaps Ms. Slayton can answer this. Mr. Nance brought up, if a water and sewer ratepayer uses one or two HCF units, they're still charged for three. Is that the truth, or where is the cutoff on the rates?
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council members. It's zero to four units.
Okay.
And that's the first rate.
And I was wishing we had a cutoff at one to two. But, okay.
One other comment, too, about the next steps on the bulk and scale discussion, which we announced at that meeting. Hopefully, we're getting our general plan back from the Coastal Commission, and we'll be adding those discussions to that review, which will go through the Planning Commission and City Council. However, if that doesn't happen, and that's something we may want to agendize, is when we want to bring that back if it doesn't come back from the Coastal Commission, because we do want to get moving on that topic. But anyway, we will be addressing that shortly through the process. There'll be a lot of other public hearings that you'll be able to weigh in on those issues. They are being looked at. Okay, with that, Fire Department didn't have anything else to say before we go on break.
No,
I
passed my information to Steve. He did a very good job.
Okay, thank you. So we'll take a short break, and then we'll go to our public hearings. Okay, this is our public hearing, presentation on ships to reefs and consideration of sending a resolution in support. And Rick, were you going to introduce our guest?
I will. I'll introduce Eleanor Rewerts, who's the executive director of California Ships to Reef.
If you could come up.
Technical difficulties here. You want to pull the microphone down. There you go.
There we go.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor and members of the council, I am Eleanor Rewerts. I'm executive director of California Ships to Reefs, which is a 501c3 nonprofit public benefit corporation. And we're comprised of regional nonprofits called SYNC groups. And the SYNC group that deals with the San Luis Obispo County area covers everything from Point Conception north to the Oregon border and is called Northern California Oceans Foundation. Okay, I did something wrong. Here we go. Every field has its own terminology. In the field of ecological development and resource management, there's a key term, sustainable. People have come to understand that short-term solutions, like cutting down all the trees, killing all the sea life, dumping toxic waste, usually for short-term financial gain, is not the way to go. The best solutions are always sustainable. When you have a solution that is sustainable and beneficial to both the environment and the economy, you have a real win-win. That's what you're going to hear about this evening. Here's the real bottom line. Our goal is to act as stewards of the ocean, to enhance what is there, create new habitat where needed. Internationally, there's a growing and very knowledgeable group of duty-motivated people that share their talents in the belief, as John Chatterton, that ships to reefs is the future of diving. Joe Weatherby of Florida is the prime mover there, and you've probably seen him quoted in connection with the sinking, oh, that's what happened, of the USS Oriskany and USS Vandenberg. Jay Strath is a British Columbia lawyer who led the BC artificial reefing program. And here in California, we have Dick Long, who was the mover and shaker of the Yukon Project and now the chief advisor to CS2R. Okay, this isn't working. There. This is an overview of our long-term objectives. We want to create 10 to 20 reef systems along the California coastline over the next 10 years. These will enhance habitat and create sustainable economic growth for those locales close to where the sink sites are located. There are three problems that can be improved upon through uniting in the common cause of ships to reefs. The governments of the United States and California are getting an enormous amount of pressure, and rightly so, for creating a toxic time bomb. Ships that haven't been properly cleaned and prepared literally rot and contaminate the bay around them. This is the situation in Suisun Bay near San Francisco right now. As far as the ecology goes, those of you who have been diving in Virginia, as you can see, there's no shortage. In fact, it's a big problem demanding a big solution. And putting down ships one here and one there isn't going to help much. So our solution is to create a repeatable, sustainable system for disposing of these right here in our own state. It's the best way to turn these obsolete, toxic problems into sustainable, ecological, and economic treasures. Shortly after the Yukon was sunk in 2000, and then again in 2004, a thorough study was conducted by the RAND Corporation in contract with the Department of Defense to determine the options for disposal. Long-term storage really isn't an option because once you've spent this $4.92 billion, future generations still have to do something for the vessels. And the Navy and MARAD consider long-term storage to be approximately 100 years. Domestic recycling has become unattractive due to the additional labor costs imposed by governmental regulations and the high volatile scrap metal market prices. There are only two shipyards left in the United States that are even willing to do this work, one in Brownsville, Texas, and one in Chesapeake Bay, Virginia. Overseas recycling is no longer an option. In 1997, the EPA Toxic Substances Control Act effectively outlawed sending U.S. ships full of toxics overseas. That leaves ships to reefs as the only viable, sustainable option. Just to get your head around the numbers, these were for just a single ship, a Spruance-class destroyer. I'm going one slide too fast here. Anyone who's been diving on the Yukon can see the undeniable growth of invertebrate life, even though this is a relatively new reef. As mentioned, it was sunk in the year 2000. Fish move around and are harder to count, but fish counts are done on a regular basis to monitor the growth of various species. The Scripps Institute of Oceanography report in 2005, which reviewed scientific fish and invertebrate counts over a two-year period, showed a 300% increase in procreation on the Yukon itself. This is a summary of the Dive Equipment Manufacturers Association detailed roadmap to reefing. It's a big picture of what needs to occur. Joe Weatherby, who's been working on the Vandenberg, it's been taking him 10 years to get it to a point where it is now. It just went into the shipyard. They're just now starting to get it clean and ready to go. Building on his hard-won experience, that of Dick Long, but with our own unique challenges, we intend to do it a lot faster. Comparing where California is in this process, we are literally missing the boat when it comes to the benefits we could be reaping from an active Ships to Reefs program. It was started by the Department of Fish and Game, and the reefs that were created are flourishing and prosperous, but it's a drop in the bucket, or should we say a drop in the ocean. The primary point of agreement that we get from governments and the business communities at all levels is not the benefits to ocean ecology, but the positive economic impact of ship reefing. The single biggest beneficiaries are actually not divers or the dive industry, but the hotels, restaurants, airlines, and government through increased tax base. And this slide just shows some of those areas that benefit. That's why governments here in the United States and abroad are investing heavily in this process. Florida has recently introduced legislation to create a matching funds trust for their Ships to Reefs projects. Here in California, however, we have to sell the concept based on its benefits within our own state. Here are some statistics gathered from a University of Florida study in 2006, which show the impact economically in just the four southeastern Florida counties. This does not take into account the very active reefing program in other areas of the state. Closer to home, the sinking of the Yukon has doubled the income of the dive industry in San Diego and poured $4.5 million per year into the local economy. Those in the local dive industry don't need much convincing. We're getting very positive reaction from the Dive Boat Captains Association, who think about the fuel they'll save and the number of trips they can make on just two tank dives, which are about a half hour away. They can be back in time for lunch so they can repeat it in the afternoon. And you might think these out-of-county diver expenses seem a little bit high, but you have to remember that many divers bring their non-diving families with them, and they visit SeaWorld, the San Diego Zoo, etc. San Diego had a thriving dive industry prior to Yukon sinking. In other areas of the state, like San Luis Obispo County, where the industry isn't strong, jobs would be created, not just supplemented. This is a broad business model that we're currently using. It's been successfully applied in other prominent Ships to Reefs areas. The federal government typically donates a ship with a grant for cleaning, etc. You may have read the recent AP articles about the invasive species on the hulls of the Suisun Bay Reserve Fleet. The U.S. Coast Guard, Cal EPA, and the Bay Area Water Quality Management Agency have demanded removal of all parts of the Suisun Bay Fleet, which are available for reefing, If the application is made and the ship is formally transferred. The size of the ships chosen also affects where they are being placed, what depth, and other factors. Thus, the site selection is an important preliminary decision. Aside from the purely economic and ecological benefit, there is another very human aspect to the creation of reefs as memorials to the ships and the sailors who have served on them. Ships to Reefs is the sustainable solution, the only solution that offers long-term environmental and economic benefit. The real benefit, over and above creating more fun and income for ourselves, is the enhancement of the ocean and all who draw life from her, our grandchildren, our state, country, and planet. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions from council?
Actually, I do.
Betty?
Yes. The previous speaker during public comment raised some questions about being so far north that it wouldn't be as a desirable place, that a lot of these places are like in Florida and San Diego where the water's warmer. Do you have a response to that?
North of here, there's a little town called Monterey. And Monterey has at least as thriving a diving industry as San Diego. They have several charter boats up there that go out two times a day, morning and afternoon. And divers, in fact, they're clamoring to have a vessel put down up there. Because of the sanctuary, it's a difficult nut to crack. And so we're looking at other areas of the state. A lot of divers wear a dry suit as opposed to a wetsuit so that they're able to stay warmer when they're diving. And we have talked with the divers in this area, your four local dive shops. The water here is clear. usually from about late September through late January, early February, basically when your tourism industry starts to die off a little bit after Labor Day. So the influx of divers would be better then. And so our survey shows they'll come. 65% of those that we surveyed, which represents about 5,000 divers in Northern California, said they'd come to San Luis Obispo County 1 to 10 times a year. And obviously, some of those will bring their families to do other things while they're out on the water.
So it's a seasonal activity.
They can dive all year round. Mm-hmm. It's just that the water clarity is better during that period of time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The divers that live here locally, your dive shops do classes out here all the time. The marine biologist that's currently documenting your coastline dives every single day, 365 days a year. Mm-hmm. And I just recently saw some of his raw footage, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
The report we have is that you've located a couple of sites in particular that you're interested in. Those will be negotiated with Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, and NEP. Is there still ropes to go through?
Oh, yes. We have approximately 13 permits to go through. A complete EIR has to be done. The one site we're looking at that's local to you is northwest of the rock, about a mile. It's out by the Tenney Buoy, just west of there. And we're looking to permit a 1 square mile so that if this works, we get the first ship down, and your community wants us to increase that, we'll have the capability of adding other ships of different shapes and sizes to that area. Mm-hmm. But as I say, about 13 permitting agencies, including Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife and NOAA, a Coastal Commission. I mean, the list goes on forever.
And because you did say there might be a cookie-cutter EIR that would go out, but our project would be before you got that cookie-cutter done?
Essentially, what we're doing is we're taking the EIR that was done for the Yukon, which is on the video that you were supplied with today. We're pulling the portions out of that are generic that could be used for any location, and then into that we have to plug the site-specific items, mm-hmm. things that are specific to the area where we're looking, because the water, the depth, the clarity, all of those things, the nearby current habitats, all those have to be put into the EIR. Mm-hmm. So those become more specific with each location.
Mm-hmm. And so what we would pass tonight, if it's voted on, is to allow our harbor people to work with you. So that's kind of a donation of city time for your project. Is that right? And are there other costs that you expect from the city?
Okay, we are not here with our hand out. Mm-hmm. Okay, what we're trying to do is make sure that everybody in the community is aware of what we're doing and wants us here, because we don't want to put a vessel here if the community doesn't want us here. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's essentially why we're here. We would love, obviously, to have Rick work with us. Basically, it's best to have the harbor people do that, because it's, you know, they know the area much better than we do. We would need some of his time to do that. At some point, once the vessel goes down, I would imagine Harbor Patrol might be involved and out to dive on the location.
Okay.
Traditionally, the way these have worked in the past is a portion of the funds go to whoever is the quote-unquote concessionaire, which in this case would be CS2R. We would be responsible for maintaining the buoys, the navigational aids. If there is signage on the vessel pointing the way to different things, those kinds of things, those have to be cleaned periodically to make sure that the signs don't get covered up. So a portion of those funds would come to us, and the balance, should the city at some point in time decide to donate some development funds or something, could come back to the city to replenish that fund, those funds. So it's an ongoing thing. And you're San Diego, they got about 10,800 divers in the first year. If you multiply that times $10, that's a goodly amount of money coming back to the city, if the city decided at some point to do that. But again, we're not asking for you to.
Can you guys handle all the insurance issues?
Okay. The liability issue, and we discussed this briefly with your city attorney earlier. The state of California, a couple of your local legislators are looking at current language that we have proposed to indemnify the state and any local jurisdictions and CS2R from any liability issues. When a diver buys a chip or goes out on a dive boat, he signs a liability waiver indemnifying the operators everything from the beginning of time to the end of the world. and anything in between. Obviously, you know, with the site we're looking at for Morro Bay, because it's not on city property, it would be the state that would be involved. So, you know, you guys shouldn't have any liability issues at all, I wouldn't think.
Melody?
Yeah, you know, I went to the presentation that y'all gave down at the Diablo Information Center.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed at the way you handled the questions on the environment. But just now you answered Councilmember Wendholz by saying Monterey doesn't have it because it's kind of a tough nut with a marine sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you have hundreds off the coast of Florida, have you ever sunk a ship in a marine sanctuary
mm-hmm.
off
yeah.
any state?
In fact, the Vandenberg that I discussed with Joe Weatherby's been working on is going down in the sanctuary in the Florida Keys. There are other vessels in the sanctuary. It's just that the people that are running the Monterey Sanctuary are resistant to putting anything that isn't already in the water in the water. And so we're in the process of doing an application with them. They haven't told us no. They said if we go in a research or an educational basis situation where we're going to be educating the public on what's going on under the water, that they might very well consider it. But until the application is presented to them, they can't decide one way or the other.
Okay.
And it takes a long time to get anything through, you know. Through the sanctuary.
Then the other thing you said at the other presentation I went to was that you prefer that there are several ships put down, not just, we're not talking about sinking just one,
right.
but to actually have a pipeline of them so that you make rather a large structure out there, too.
Correct, yeah, and that's why we want to permit a 1 square mile area, and that might not be a complete square. It might be a half mile by 2 miles long. They're going to vary up and down the state depending on the bottom topography, what it looks like and how we can set that up. But the one out here is pretty square, and you can fit a lot of vessels in a square mile.
Yeah, your consultant, Tanera, sent me the maps,
mm-hmm.
and so I've just been passing that down, if you've all seen it, to show the location of that
mm-hmm.
1 square mile.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Betty?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. How soon would people be able to start diving once you put the boat down, and is there a point at which it becomes such a habitat that they no longer could dive there?
Normally what happens is the vessel goes down and we like to have a scientific team go down and do a complete survey immediately after sinking to document exactly what the area is like at sinking. And that sometimes takes a day or two, so we usually, at least in San Diego, that's what we did. They asked the divers to wait a day or two for that to be done, and then they can start diving on it. And people are still diving on the wrecks in Truck Lagoon that were sunk during World War II. There are the old ironclads that were sunk off of the North Carolina coast during the Civil War era, and those are still being dived on. So, I mean, and that's, you know, over 150 years ago. So it's, you know, they last a very long time.
Mm-hmm. And could you respond to the comment earlier about radioactivity?
To the best of my knowledge, none of the vessels in System Bay were radioactive. I'm not quite sure where they got that. I have heard that from this gentleman one time before at another meeting, and I haven't heard about any of those being radioactive.
Morro Bay, and speaking tonight as the chair of the San Luis Bay chapter of the Surfrider Foundation, and unfortunately, we're not able to make the meeting that the Ships to Reef program had last week. But we appreciate the concept and the ideas of sustainability and discussions in general about what we can do as a state to promote activities and so on that are maybe not so impactful on our environment. So we like the conversation. However, we are very uncomfortable with the current proposal for a couple of reasons, and really the main one is our chapter and Surfrider in general, one of our main stances and programs is beach cleanups and coastal awareness and ocean protection. And this program, although it does seem like the Navy and the Ships to Reef group has put a lot of thought into how they can make these ships potentially more safe for the community and for the ocean environment, it still seems very much like a program of let's dump some resource that we have used that we don't have use for anymore in an area that we can find a way just to dispose of it easily and with as limited a cost as possible. And so along those lines, it's really hard for us to support this program at all. And in fact, we don't support it. We feel like there are other better means for the disposal of these ships, and actually we would promote that our community in general, and especially the state of California, given our efforts to enhance the marine environment, if we have 73 ships or so and we're looking for a repeatable, sustainable solution to this problem that seems to be potentially giving the potential to develop even more ships beyond these 73 as more come down the pike, why are we not developing a California ship recycling program like our automobile recycling program? Our resources in our community and worldwide are becoming more and more less and less available, let's say, and with the need supposedly for these ships to be taken somewhere, 73 ships seems like a lot, and the state of California seems to have the wherewithal and the desire to do the right thing, and that potentially a recycling program is the true sustainable option, especially because it promotes the idea that we are not developing materials that are going to be thrown away and forgotten about. We're developing materials with the idea of the cradle-to-cradle approach to design and resource management, where the things are designed to be reused and recycled at the end of their useful lifespan. So this program, the Ships Reef program, seems to embrace the cradle-to-grave approach, which is expensive both in resources and also in the amount of effort that it takes to potentially to work on any problems that may occur. And that's one of the things this program seems to be 10 years old. And so we had a couple quick questions. Just like to know what would be the potential cost of a ship removal program if perhaps there were PCBs or some of these other toxins were noticed in a monitoring program. That seems to be a necessary number for us to know. So thank you.
Okay, we'll ask that. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is George Taylor. I'm from the hinterlands of Los Osos, but I'm a lifelong fisherman, and I just going to start out by saying I don't want the federal government dumping their garbage in our front yard. I think that it's not, it hasn't been well thought out. I think that there's a lot of things. I don't trust the federal government for cleaning up their ships and making them something that we would be comfortable with in our offshore environment. There are a lot of things besides the oil and metals and such like that need to be taken into consideration that I don't think have been adequately taken into consideration. And I think that it needs to be given a lot more thought than just buying into this idea of something that's going to be really good for Morro Bay, because Morro Bay we try to think of ourselves as being in Los Osos as being part of Morro Bay, and I think that Morro Bay needs to think a little more globally towards the rest of us in the immediate coastal area, and I just can't buy it. It's not a good concept. It's someplace where the federal government can get rid of some trash. Thank you.
Thank you. There is no way at all that these ships can bring back the actual reefs and the actual natural habitats. So let's not make any mistake about that. It's not going to be reforesting that area. It's just not. They are talking about one of their cost factors is they need a 100
year long-term storage. So this is going to cut down on their 100-year long-term storage to dump it in the ocean. I mean, and talk about the federal government. We already have Diablo Canyon. We were promised Yucca Valley or Yucca nuclear site would be ready for to store that waste. Well, it's not, and it's not going to be for a long time, if ever. So we're stuck with storing nuclear waste right there. So, the federal government coming in and saying that they're going to do us a favor here, please take some caution. Also, they were talking about the divers in San Diego that they have 10,800 divers a year and 6,000 from out of town. If this is a beautiful place. If we were diver-friendly, they would already be here in a larger quality. The people that go out have to be hardcore that go out there in the ocean, out in this area. They're not just your weekend recreational divers. So I think that we're, and then you take into account Monterey is not opening their arms. We happen to have our own sanctuary here, and I hope that we're sophisticated enough to take this into consideration, not just be a silly, silly little broken town. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Sadowski, Citizen, North Morro Bay. Back in the early 80s, I had the opportunity of working on the Vandenberg Air Force Base and was a member of the Vandenberg Air Force Base Dive Club. And off Point Agüello, where I worked, which was Space Launch Complex number 3, there was the worst peacetime naval disaster in history that occurred back after World War I. And 7 destroyers landed up on the shores there. During my time at Vandenberg, there was about 5 days at the most out of the year where you could even dive there. And then most of the diving that you did there was for, getting abalone and stuff like that. The conditions out here, north of Point Conception, all the sailors know it's no longer a user-friendly ocean. And this idea that it's going to bring all this dive business in is actually a bit ridiculous. So I would not recommend using our beautiful Estero Bay. We have State Marines reserves here that went into effect and not using it as a garbage pail for the Navy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of the state of California. And this is going to affect every one of us, not just those that live along the coast. Is everything predicated on money? Are all the decisions that we make for this state, this community, any community, predicated only on money? If so, we need to reevaluate what we are doing. Creating a problem is something that you are being asked to do. Are you willing to clean up that problem if it goes astray? This area has different storm surges than San Diego. It has different storm surges than Florida. It is a unique area in which the winds do not determine when they are going to come up or when they are going to go down. We have a lot of fishermen that are unable to go out to sea because of weather conditions. Are you creating more problems because you are not going to be able to generate the funds that you perceive that you are going to get from people coming in here to dive? The county does not have funds to help you. The county does not have funds to help anybody, let alone themselves. Until a decision by the legislature has been made for a program to be allowed.
Got lots of little fish, and it doesn't take long.
Now, they're worried about toxics. The government is going to have to haul those ships out and spend over $1 million to clean them up. And we're not talking diesel fuel. They're going to sandblast the bottom paint right off those things. So they take care of those toxics. And if there's any toxics there, they'll be responsible for them eventually. So, but they know. So now let's say they put these ships here. Now, as long as they don't put them in the city, Morro Bay city limits out here, that's fine with me. I don't want them to be liable for any of the divers go off there and might get stuck down there and drown. But basically, you know, it's not a scary scenario. If they sink those ships here, within a few years, there'll be a lot of fish on them. And even if the divers aren't diving, they'll be sport fishing there. And especially since the RCA has been closed and the guy to fish inside of 40 fathoms of sport boats do, and in some cases inside of 20, I guess that would be a pretty good deal for them to attract some fish. Now, those ships, they get growth on them within a few months. They start having barnacles going on. Depends on how deep they're situated. Then mussels. That provides food for crabs and provides food for the other fishermen. And eventually, it all builds up. At first, it's just an attraction for fish. You know, you're sucking them away from some other area. But eventually, it becomes a habitat. And there's habitats all up and down here are ships that are sunk. And the world hasn't come to an end, and our beaches are still great, and you can't see those ships. You wouldn't know they were there unless you were a fisherman or a diver. So I don't see any problem with what they want to do. It's not going to help me any. I don't fish inshore, and I don't dive, and I can care less whether they put it there or not. But I just wanted to get up here and say that all this crap that these guys have been putting up with here and putting out is exactly what it is.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. And, yeah, we would like to ask a couple of questions that were raised. First one was about removal costs and then about toxics not being allowed overseas and why are they here. So those two questions.
Okay, first of all, the government is not doing this. This is not the federal government dumping vessels in the ocean. This is a 501c3 nonprofit group. And the only thing the government does is they provide us with a vessel. They provide us with the funds to do the cleaning, which must be done by certified people that are trained to do all of this. They take out asbestos, PCBs, all the greases and oils. If there's bunker fuel, anything along those lines, any toxics that might go in the ocean. Then California Ships to Reefs is responsible for what we call diverizing the vessel. We go through, we take out all the wiring cabling, any overhead pipes, those kinds of things. As I mentioned earlier, the Barrier Water Quality Management Agency, Cal-EPA, and the Coast Guard are demanding that all of the invasive species that are on those vessels now come off before they're even moved out of the bay. So that has to be done before they can even be moved. What's going down in the ocean is a completely cleaned steel ship. When the Yukon went down, Cal-EPA's comment was, you could eat off the deck. That's how clean it was.
Just for the benefit of the council, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, a year ago last May, adopted a best practices document, which is a guidelines for cleaning the vessels. And as far as we are concerned, what they set out is the minimum that we would do to clean the vessels. We are looking to actually exceed those standards. If I could address the question of recycling, ship recycling in this country is almost dead, and the reason it's almost dead is because the labor costs are so high. Texas and Virginia, unfortunately, don't have the same kind of worker protection and environmental protection laws that we do here. That's why the only two yards that are recycling vessels are in those states. And it costs the Navy $5 million to move a vessel from here to there and have it recycled. So, you know, that's not a cost-effective means of disposing of anything. On the question of artificial reefs versus natural reefs, we understand that this is not a natural reef. The typical California natural reef is what's called a rock and spire reef. It'll be a low ridge of rock, and somewhere on that low ridge of rock, there'll be a spire that sticks up anywhere from 6 feet to 150 feet up from the bottom. A vessel doesn't replicate that unless it's laid on a bed of rocks or rubble or concrete. And we're not trying to replicate that. What we do replicate is the spire portion. And because the vessel has nooks and crannies in the superstructure, that's where the fish go to breed and feed and hide from predators. So that's where the fish population can go to even going near the recreational dive limit.
The weather.
And I think I addressed all the questions about the weather. The weather here is actually better than Monterey. The Monterey divers, in fact, I'm going to Monterey 2 weekends from now actually to take my wreck diving certification. I dive a dry suit now because a dry suit is the best way to dive in cold water. And with a dry suit, you don't get cold. You wear long underwear under it, and it keeps you dry. And when you come up, you don't have the chills. Whereas with a wetsuit, after a couple of dives, you're getting pretty cold. More and more people are going to dry suits, and more people are discovering that diving in California can be a whole lot of fun.
Okay. Any other questions? Rick?
Who determines the type of ship, size of ship, and numbers of ships that will go in this area?
What we will do is, initially, we're permitting one ship, and the site is a square mile. If we want to put any additional vessels down, for instance, if the harbor were to come to us and say, we have repossessed a trawler, or we've repossessed a fishing boat, and to get rid of it, we have to spend $50,000, would you help us in reefing that vessel? Then we will assist them. If it's another Navy vessel, we would have to go through at least that permitting process for the vessel portion, even if we have an active permit for the site. So the permitting process would be revisited with each vessel that we considered. As far as who chooses the vessel, we would do it in consultation with your harbor master, the Coast Guard, the Navy, and or MARAD. And when we go to look at those vessels, we have to take with us a marine surveyor to determine exactly what needs to be done to that vessel. Is it suitable? How long, how wide, how deep, how many compartments, all of those things. So it's a very complex process, and there's a lot of expertise that has to be done in choosing a vessel.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, it is an interesting question. What if your 501c3 should... Actually, how long have you been in existence?
Okay.
And then what happens if you were to go out of existence? Who would take over this program?
Okay. California Ships to Reefs has actually only been incorporated since the beginning of the year, but we've been in existence since the Yukon went down in 2000. We were at that time a committee of San Diego Oceans Foundation. Now it's just the reverse. San Diego Oceans Foundation is one of our 501c3 sync groups, and the sync groups are local so that we can deal with the issues that are on the local level. We do the permitting at the local level. All the contacts are done by the individual sync groups while we all belong to CS2R. Each individual sync group is its own 501c3. And those are the people that are actually going to be managing the reefs, not CS2R. CS2R deals with the state and the federal governments. Okay, the local sync group is the one that would be dealing with this. And if they ever go out of business, that's something we haven't discussed. I don't know how to answer.
Excuse me, but do we have a local sync group?
We are. Northern California Oceans Foundation is your local sync group. Okay. And Dean and I are both on the board of directors of that as well as CS2R.
If I can add just one thing. One of the things that we asked some of the folks down here was would the divers here be interested in forming their own sync group, or would they like to become, you know, a subcommittee of NCOF, Northern California Oceans Foundation? How would they like to structure anything that happened down here? And what they indicated to us is because NCOF is already in existence, they would like to form a committee down here, a San Luis Obispo chapter of NCOF. So that's what we're doing, and I think in about 2 weeks we're having a meeting with one of the local dive shops is organizing so that we can get the boots on the ground here in the area, the folks that are interested, and organize them. And those are the folks that will be doing the maintenance of the buoys, the maintenance of the aids to navigation, and those things to make sure that everyone knows where that wreck is. It's not going to be a hazard to navigation and all those kinds of things.
Okay.
I actually have a question for staff.
Okay.
I'm looking at this map, and it appears to be in relationship to our outfall lease or outfall from the sewer plant. Is there any kind of a relationship there between, or could you tell me how far it is from the outfall to the diving area, and if that's a concern?
Well, the site that is being talked about the most in Estero Bay is about a mile north of the rock, about a mile offshore, and 120 feet. And I honestly, I don't know if Bruce knows right offhand where our sewer outfall is.
My recollection is I think it's about a quarter of a mile.
Yeah.
There's a buoy you can see on a kind of a clear day.
And the flow of the current isn't going to be an issue with people down
there. And buoyancy compensation and everything that they were today. I look at divers today and say, where are the training wheels? But anyway, didn't mean that as a... we used to do a lot of diving on a wreck, and it was in about 120 feet of water, and it was in really rotten visibility on the way down until you hit a thermocline and swam into the coldest water in the world. But it was a marvelous thing to dive on. It was just incredible, the amount of fish living in it and on it, and... it was something that was quite popular with divers. We ended up by removing some of the portholes and storm covers and things and sending those to the San Francisco Maritime Museum. But I can imagine what having something like that would do for marine life offshore, because basically out there about a mile out, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's just flat sand, and that's not a wonderful place for divers. The divers, when I was involved with it here, would sport divers were working around Target Rock, which gets old after a while, and then they'd go up off of up north of Cayucas, off of Alexander's Ranch up there in that vicinity, and those are really the only places to dive if you didn't go to Montana de Oro, because everything else was just flat sand. So this gives a destination for divers, and it gives something for fish besides halibut to come do, because there aren't many fish that want to live around a flat sandy bottom, and so at least that I've found. So I think that if this is done right, it could be beneficial both to the environment as well as for those people who might want to come look at it.
Okay. Betty?
I have real mixed feelings. I think I'd like a little bit to wait until the state legislature does its thing with the insurance and the liability. Though it's not us, it's the state. I guess it's responsible because it's outside the city limits. And then just my general philosophy about recycling, I guess, was touched upon by the Surfrider Foundation. Is this really the best use of this resource? And I'm a little confused about why the federal government's willing to spend money or give money to help clean up a boat when they know it's polluting the bay, but they're not willing to clean it up and just let it stay there. It has to go somewhere and be sunk. I mean, why wouldn't you just clean it up regardless whether it had a destination or not? So I have to say that I'm torn. I can see Mr. Pierce's testimony and Mr. Ewing's testimony earlier. At the same time, there are others that were also speaking. So I guess I'd like to hear what the other end has to say.
Okay. Rick?
You know, I really can't compare this with San Diego or Florida either. It's much more tropical and nicer to dive in, but... On the other hand, if it's, you know, if it's just metal and nothing else that's going down there, and it's clean and it's going to enhance the fish population and give them a place to go and hide and procreate, then I'm for that. And I'd like to see where it would be part of like a coastal diving trip, you know, from one town to the other and advertise them all. As far as the federal government goes, there. They wouldn't take the money to clean up those just to leave them there anyway. The only way they're going to spend the money is to get them out of that area so they can do some other things with their space up there. But I think if I had to vote yes or no on this, I'd probably vote yes.
Melanie?
Well, I'm going to try to explain it now to Mr. Algert, because he was shocked when I said I supported this idea. I support this idea as an environmentalist who really thinks that the climate is toast and the world is toast. I got quite depressed a couple of years ago when I was talking to some engineers who I teach. And they said to me, Ms. Demerit, to live in the new world that we're creating, we're going to have to adapt. And what I see, some lady said, don't create a problem. We already have a problem of dying reefs worldwide. Fish are losing habitat everywhere. And when I went to their presentation, they said that their first principle is to do no harm. And we had environmentalists there from Santa Barbara, all over the place, just throwing questions at them and throwing questions at them. And I was waiting for them to cave and not have a reasonable answer. There's another thing you should know is that as the ocean warms, it's releasing CO2 and not inhaling it anymore. But that lead oxides, they're talking about plans now to inject lead oxides into the bottom of the ocean to help it absorb the CO2. I'm also reading a book right now called, it's a grim little book, called The World Without Us. So I know what's going to happen to that ship in a couple hundred years. It won't be there anymore. So I don't have any problem with this. I think to be a practical environmentalist, you have to start adapting to the reality on the planet. And I'm not doing this for any money or any divers. I've never dove. I don't know divers. I want some.
They're creating life. That's kind of exciting to me. So I'm very much in favor of it. And I think that there's a couple of things in our resolution. It says, provided that the project is a benefit to the environment, the local economy, and coastal-related uses. And it also says, understanding that the city of Moore Bay has no financial resources to apply to the project at this time. So I'm in favor of supporting the resolution. Any other comments, or do we want to have a motion?
Just one other comment. I would be curious to know from Mr. Albert how much time he thinks this would be involved with for him.
It would be really hard for me to predict. I think it's good for the city that it's not being proposed on city property. I think that's going to limit staff involvement. Up until this time, it's been fairly light, informational and attending meetings and a little bit of work with them in some meetings. So we can limit our involvement, or, you know, we could get more involved. Right now, I'm trying to be very careful to not, you know, overcommit, because we already are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I can make a motion to approve resolution number 51-07.
Sure. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
I voted yes.
You did. Okay. 5-0. Thank you. Okay.
Quick break.
Quick break? Okay, quick break, and then we're going to come back, and I think we're going to take D1 out of order so that the person presenting it can go home. Could someone go outside and see if they could find her, please?
I'll do that.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
Okay. If she's dog walking, that we want to find her. I hear a door. No? She's not up there either? Okay, well, let's turn the camera off and wait till we get Betty back. Okay, can we turn the camera off until we find all our council people, please? Thank you.
Sections. About business, tourism, city projects, and so forth, the environment and the harbor. It was suggested at the business forum, which meets on Thursday mornings several months back, that the city needed to be looking at some long-range planning. And Janice says, well, we've got this document that we did. We really don't need to look at a new document, but recognizing that good principles of strategic planning say that you kind of go back at these plans and say, how's it working? What can we do to make it work better? And that's what we've gotten together to do. We've got a committee of about seven or eight people that meets on theoretically a regular basis in my office. We have had some success at doing that with you, and less success other times. We started in March, which, and I looked back at the minutes of all these meetings, and we started in March, and it surprised me how long we've been working at it, because it doesn't seem like we've actually been spending that much time on it. We've been meeting a couple of times a month, and the minutes of these discussions are really very interesting. We've covered a broad range of things. What the result has been is that we have a group. Each one of the members of our group has adopted part of one of the sections, or is one of a couple of people working on one of the sections, and they have developed groups themselves that meet regularly to discuss these. The purpose or the goal that we have is to have a public forum. We're hoping to have it by the end of the year, although I'm not sure where we are right now whether that's actually going to occur, where we bring the 2020 report and we bring the work of the committee to the public, and we present that work to a public forum, break out into different groups relating to each of these sections, and get public input places in the city that are not occupied or not being used for business purposes, with the goal of setting up a matrix about what these sites are like, with the idea that they can help. This will help to recruit new businesses to Morro Bay by making some information about what facilities are available in Morro Bay easily available to realtors who might ask. They can go out and recruit, look at business organizations and say, we have these kind of things available. Do you know anybody who might be interested? That has a lot of potential for bringing new businesses to Morro Bay. So, like I said, the thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to bring a look at the 2020 vision plan back to the City Council, so the City Council can look at this document afresh. We expect to make recommendations, and we expect to have some report on what's working and what's not working and where to go, and that's what we've done. That's where we are. We've put a lot of time in. It's been a really fascinating experience for me, because I like sitting down and talking to people with bright minds about things that are going on and get some new perspectives. We've got people like Peter Candela and Janice. Ed Biagini's on the committee. Betty's on there. Judy Salamaca. Nancy Bard is on the committee. Joseph Goodwin. And that's the point that I just missed. Joseph Goodwin came to me and he says, well, what about housing? Aren't you going to talk about housing? And we sort of talked around about it. He says, in the business section of the 2020 vision report are a couple of sections about housing in Morro Bay. So we said, sure, look into it. And Joseph is, I don't know if you know, all of you know what Joseph's doing, but he's working very hard at bringing housing for low and very low income people, so that Morro Bay businesses and the Morro Bay community will have places for the people who do low income work around here, will have a place to live. It's very important to the success of businesses, and very important to the health of our community, is so that when somebody gets to the point where they can't afford to live the way they're living, and that happens to seniors a lot, is that there's a place they might be able to go and still stay here and still be part of the community. That's one of the aspects that has been a change in Morro Bay. It's one of the changes that we recognized in this. You know, how has Morro Bay changed? What's changed in our environment that needs, maybe 2020 report needs to look at? So I'm open to any questions you might have. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you and talk to you. And if you want to look at the minutes for our meetings, let me know and I'll email them to you. There's about 12 of them, so.
Any questions for Stuart? Okay, thank you.
Could I add a couple?
Oh, I'm sorry, Melody?
Just comments?
Yeah, I was going to do that. I was going to make him stand for it if he didn't have to. I mean, he could sit down and listen to the comments. If if it wasn't a question.
I can stand for them if you want.
That's true. You could probably have a seat.
Okay.
Okay, comment. I think I'd like to add, Betty probably would too, just some of the things that we've done. And that's why I gave you the copy of this draft letter. What Peter Kandel and I have been working on is business encouragement. And one of the things that Peter's done is taken an inventory of all the available commercial spaces in town. And then we put together this letter that we would like to send out from the mayor and the president of the chamber as to, you know, inviting specific kinds of businesses to town. For instance, the one that we're looking at is a Denny's or something like that to fill what used to be Denny's. We don't have a 24-hour coffee shop. And we thought if we took a proactive stance as far as contacting Caro's and IHOP and Denny's and all of these 24-hour places and tell them, you know, here's a facility, here's a community that really needs you, here's the realtor's name, come on and look. That we thought that might be really a proactive way to encourage businesses that we don't have. And one of the things we're doing is putting together a list of things that we don't have, the kind of services that we, all of us, have to go out of town for, what products do we go over to San Luis for that we can't find here, and target that. So it has been really interesting, and I haven't attended all the meetings because they're at 8 o'clock in the morning, but it has been a very proactive way to make the 2020 Vision Report a living document, and I really appreciate Stuart kind of keeping us all together through all of this. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Betty? Okay, Melody?
Well, I took a shot at a letter like this a couple of years ago to send off to Trader Joe's and did a little looking around, and for example, there's a sentence in here that says a tourist destination. We have a tourist destination that adds many thousands. Heck, we have over 1 million. And I think it's good to say that we have over 1 million. It's like 1.25 million tourists a year. And they go through here and they eat at places like Denny's. I think also that we shouldn't be talking about a customer base of 75,000 residents within a 25-minute drive, because nobody drives for 25 minutes to go to a yogurt store.
Right, exactly. We're going to try and tailor it that way. And it also, we've got to be careful because we can't be seen as favoring any particular real estate agent, but we can let the businesses know, hey, this is available, here's who you call if you're interested. So, okay, with that, thank you very much, Stuart.
Thank you.
And we will move on. Let's go back to our consent agenda. And who would like to pull what?
I think others will be pulling items, but I'll just start and then pick up A3, 4, 6, and 7. And if that's okay with the council, I'd suggest we start with A7.
All right. I wanted to pull A2.
And I'll pull A1 just to approve an amendment.
Okay, we've all seen that. Do we need to pull it?
No.
We do.
Okay. We pull it. We vote for it.
Okay. All right. So we do have a motion for A5?
Yes, I would move approval of A5.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Melody.
Yes, I asked for an amendment to A1 in regards to my comments about the Cloisters property. And Bridget Bauer, the city clerk, has provided us with a copy of that. It's just talking about some ideas I had about holding the lots until the building market improves. And with that, since you've all seen it, and if you're okay with that change, I would move approval of A1.
Second.
As amended. Thank you, Bridget.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, A2 is the resolution about the Development Impact Fee Program, and there was one thing in here that I just want a clarification on, and I'm sorry, I thought I had it marked.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Before we get into number 2, do you mind if we do number 7? So this, I think we were going to let a staff person go home if we did A7
first. Yeah, we were.
First.
That's why we're taking
I thought
A's
you were going
in order.
Oh, you're going to go in order.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. I guess the only question that I had on A2 was, please explain again who's in the pipeline and who's not.
The pipeline means anybody that was in that had filed an application up to September 24th.
Okay, because we had some concern for people here saying that
right.
they've worked so hard and they don't have their permit, but their application is filed.
It's probably easier to think of it the other way. Who does it apply to? It applies to anybody that has, if you adopt the resolution the way it is today, it applies to anybody that has recently entered the development review process for either a discretionary permit or building permit after September 24th and hasn't pulled a building permit by, I believe it's December 7th. Those are the only ones from there on that will pay, but this will reach back into everything that's in the process so far.
Okay. Oh, I remember the other question. The 500 square feet, that was the issue. There was a question asked at public comment about is it included or is it not? When you go to 501, then it's the whole 500 or it's the one?
It's the 501 as soon as you go over that. And that's, yes. So
okay.
The minute if you go to 501, you pay the fee for the entire amount.
And then the related question to that was if you have a building that is already in use and you're expanding. In other words, do you get double charged if you're just expanding on
that? No, you only
that,
pay for
so
new
only,
square footage.
Okay.
So if you remodel and you don't add anything, then there is no fee.
If they were to tear down part of it and replace it with the same space, does that?
It's still a demo reconstruct.
Okay. So it would only be additional square footage to what it was?
We need to look into that, but I would think that... you know, there was historically a certain amount,
yeah.
say 1,500 square feet of activity there.
So that would essentially be grandfathered in.
Right.
And it's
we'd
just
only,
the new stuff that
only calculate the incremental new square footage.
Okay. Any other questions?
This will start December 8th then? December 8th?
If this is adopted tonight, the 60 days would take us till December 7th, I believe.
Is that okay with everybody?
Well, there was a lot of talk about mm-hmm. people wanting it on the 1st of January. I mean, it's not much of a difference there. I think we should mm-hmm. just keep it at 60.
Okay. All right. With that, then I would move approval of A2.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. A3, Betty.
A3. Yes, this is actually two items in one. It was our discussion about letterhead, and it was on the majority side. And you don't necessarily want to discourage that either. And so this way, it covers both sides of an issue. And I don't know if there's better language that the city attorney would recommend, but I thought that was the simplest way to clarify.
I understand the minor point, but what did you say about the difference? What did you want to
I think the word was relationship. Because I think the point here was, how does the speaker of the writer of the letter opinion compared to the position of the whole council. And so I was trying to get at the relationship. So it's not necessarily going to be in opposition. It may be in agreement with type of idea.
I guess maybe I'd want to say the difference or relationship, because sometimes it will be a difference and you want to make sure that that's mm-hmm. stated clearly.
Mm-hmm. But that's, I guess for me, a relationship assumes that, but maybe there's a better legal term. I don't know.
No, I was just going to give you a little background because this was a little bit different than what was presented. It was the mayor's staff report, and then when it came back to me, I actually did a little research and found this and really liked this language from another city in that it was a little bit different than the other ones about writing letters when there's a city official opinion. And I think the main issue is if you were taking a position different than the city official opinion, you just have to explain that difference or the relationship, whatever word you know, and as long as it's known, that's what you're doing. I mean, for example, if city official was position was on this reef that you took in your letter, instead of just writing a letter and stating that you're an individual council member and that I'm against the reefs, you'd have to say in that letter, mm-hmm. but the majority council did pass a resolution mm-hmm. in approving this. And I think that's where we'll get at a lot of these issues. And I think what language you use, difference or relationships, I don't think it's going to change the meaning, and I'm all right with it.
And then I also had just two questions, and one of them is one that the city attorney just mentioned, and that is, what is a city position?
And is it something that's only been voted on by the council? Is it another position that we assume that staff has taken? I don't know how far this goes.
No, it's only official. To me, at least, official city position is something that's came forward in front of you and been voted on.
So
you know,
if that's
the roundabout, if that's whatever it is, okay. That's
as
the issue.
To policy or something.
Yeah.
Well, and what came to mind was the Harbor Walk, which several of us opposed several years ago. And so that would be a case where when we either write a letter or speak before the Coastal Commission, we would have to identify.
Right, that the council as a whole has voted in favor of this project, but as an individual council member, I'm against it. So that a little bit of added language that I think will clear up any issues we've had over this issue, and I kind of liked it, but we'll see how it goes, too.
And then my second one's related to your last line here on the top of the second page, and it says that letterhead shall be provided to the city manager. It does say letterhead. Do you mean letterhead? Oh, the letter on the city council on city letterhead shall be provided to the city manager and the rest of the city council. Does that mean
we
just put that in the to read file? Does that mean we have to actually print out a letter and put it in everybody's boxes?
I like it in the boxes myself. Yeah, you know, the read file doesn't always get read unless it's something lengthy and then... You know,
yeah. Okay. I do know that our current mayor has been quite prolific, and so that's going to be a lot of copying, and that was what I was thinking of when I
made
that comment.
This is only the situation when you're doing something different than the council as a whole, as opposed to something that's already a city position, and you're just supporting it also.
Mm-hmm. So any letter that I would write on behalf of the council wouldn't have to be copied in because you'd already have given your approval.
This policy is directly the one where you, when you're doing either minority opinion or whatever that difference or relationship is, a different one. This is the only scenario. It's not really addressing the issue if you're using city letterhead to support the, for example, the reefs. If a council member did a separate letter saying the council has supported this and really got behind it and wanted to write letters to all different congressmen, I don't think this policy would apply at all to that situation. It was the situation of a, I'm using the word minority, but a different
opinion
than the majority. That's what I was addressing.
And what about
how you want to address when they write those other letters, you could do the same way with the read file.
And for letters of inquiry, this doesn't count? And how do you define the difference between inquiry and otherwise? Like if you're simply asking for information, is that not included here?
It doesn't address that issue, and I know that issue still is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I
think it could be addressed in that, you know, if you're inquiring about something that has been approved by the council, whether you agreed with it or not, mm-hmm. and you're looking for more information, you could just restate, the council has approved this issue. However, I wondered about this particular question.
Or when I call up different jurisdictions, for example, on the appeal fee,
mm-hmm.
and I'm saying, how much do you charge? Because I think up here...
So we're going to drop the minor viewpoint, just have the
mm-hmm.
viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And are you okay with leaving difference? And then I was saying difference slash relationship or difference and or relationship. I like the idea of difference being in there because that's an important distinction to make if it is a different opinion.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right.
And then if I could just
change
one more time, go back to contacting the council. Could we do that by email? Rather than paper letter?
Yeah.
Because on here it says that it must be...
Okay, a copy or email. How about that?
Well, it says it has to be provided. It doesn't have to. It doesn't say it has to be on paper.
Okay.
I think you just, you know, send a copy of it to everybody concerned. We generally do that anyway. You send an email out, generally everybody gets a copy anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so those two corrections?
Okay.
Motion?
I move approval of item A3 with the two changes, which are to delete the word minor, and we're doing what? Difference slash relationship? Is that what you're
mm-hmm.
comfortable with?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. I am going to switch to A7 because otherwise we're going to leave this poor guy sitting.
Exactly.
Okay. A7. Betty.
This is a preparation and adoption of the sanitary sewer management plan. And
the concrete thing that I'd like to do is it was important to me that we have some dates included in here, because it's just this long list of things that are going to occur and when they have to reach the state, but not when they will come before us. I want to say that I really appreciate that PWAB is being involved, using as the vehicle here, and that we need to let the public know that that's the vehicle for them to get involved. But if it's okay, I would like to insert the two dates that Mr. Wade suggested, because I'd like some preparation for the council to be aware of that it's coming to us, so we know we have lead time. And that is on the next to the last page of your schedule. If in about halfway down the page, the last FOG program, that we insert the date April 6th.
Instead of May 2nd?
No, where it's blank, actually. I don't know how to point it out to you other than to show you.
Oh, okay. April 6th.
That it will come before, I assume, council. I don't know what the dates would be for PWAB.
What year?
It's in 2009.
Okay.
And on the back page, the very first column under PWAB and City Council. Now, this would relate to City Council only, so PWAB probably would need to be before this, but May 2nd, 2009. This report doesn't have a lot of content to it. I think the content is yet to come, and so what we're approving is a schedule to get the content. And hopefully there will be interim reports to us, either through staff or via PWAB on what's going on.
Okay. You folks comfortable with that?
Yeah, real quickly, let me just kind of summarize what it is and what it's for. We're demanded by basically the state laws that we have to prepare this plan, and we haven't really done that yet. There are a couple portions of that plan in here, the mission statement mainly. And what we planned on doing was actually working through the process of developing the plan with PWEB. And so we didn't want to get too hard on fixed dates. But I'm fine with when it's all said and done, we have to bring it back to the council. And we're fine with bringing the portions of it back if that's what you guys want to see as we finish those portions. That's not a problem at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So this is all about just writing and examining and writing and examining. And I'm surprised, actually, on this date plan, the schedule, that there's an inspection program. A program for the regular visual inspection, May 2nd, 2009, but haven't I been watching videotapes of this visual inspection? Isn't this already done?
Yeah, real quick, where we're at with, we're actually a little ahead of the curve on a lot of portions of this. The state has come out and mandated this through the Regional Water Quality Control Boards. There are many portions of this that we are doing currently. We currently, for example, have a fairly active inspection program, and we've been very active since 2006. We've done about 3.5 or 4 miles and anticipate getting another 3 or 4 miles done this year, which represents about 15% of our system. So we're working through many portions of this already. We're already doing a lot of what's in here. It's just formalizing and codifying it into a concrete document.
So I wrote you an email, Dylan, so I know you're all ready for this question. But I had the distinct pleasure of looking at that video going down North Main Street, one of the really big pipes, actually. And I'm just wondering, how soon are we going
to
take a
half of my time to get that package together and to get it clean and ready to go? And so the problems that then are more expensive to fix and require sort of a more extensive repair, they don't get done as quickly. They're not as quick as just the field guys take care of it. And then we have the major projects, for example, North Main, which is the one you're specifically asking about. That project, we anticipate that that's going to be somewhere, I think on the books right now, we have it in as a $3.8 million project. We're upsizing the pipe. And it's also jointly owned, so the JPA becomes involved. We're working on that now. We're doing a flow test later this week. Next week, on the 17th, I'm meeting with Cayucas, where they're going to give us their flow data and what they project their flow is going to be in whatever repaired, upsized pipe we put in the ground there. So that being said, we're working on it as quickly as we can. Our schedule right now that is very aggressive would be to break ground on that next fall. However, we have to go through the coastal review process. We need to get a coastal permit because we are upsizing the pipe. And so we're going to aggressively pursue that and try to make that deadline. I'm not sure. There's kind of some big landmines out there for that project, archaeological concerns and other things. So I'm not sure that we'll make it, but we're shooting for next fall.
Well, thank you, because ever since I saw that video, I feel uncomfortable about flushing the toilet.
Very quickly, the one spot that you observed, I think, has already been repaired. That was a private lateral that was repaired. Yes.
Yep. Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I notice, well, let me back up and ask the question. These problems, are we just replacing them, or are we thinking in terms of, like, in situ form again or slip lining some of this stuff?
Yeah, we'll pick the technology that best fits the need. Depending on what the problem is, the different solutions sort of rise to the top on their own. For a point repair that's deep, in situ form is a great way to do it. Some warrant digging up and replacing if they're shallow. So we're just picking the technology that best fits the problem that we observe.
I noticed they're working on Highway 41 almost into Atascadero. I was looking at that and wondering if we ever got our wrinkle fixed.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Question?
Yes, Rick.
On the back page, Dylan, first of all, if I could ask you, what does WDR stand for?
It's Waste Discharge Requirement. Jim, correct me if I'm wrong on that. It's Waste Discharge Requirements. So,
right. And so this is like a chain of command. Who put that together?
That was actually prepared by our intern this summer, Chad Pruitt, with the help of Jim Hayes, the collection superintendent.
And just looking at it, I'm wondering why, according to this, Oysters, Diane Ramos and Tamales Bay Oyster Company, are charged with notifying the Coast Guard, according to this.
Yeah, let me explain a little bit. But I think Melody or Betty had a question on that also. But what happens is if a spill reaches the bay, which often they do because of our unique geography here, these are the parties that we notify. So what happens is with the complaint comes in, it gets routed ultimately through Jim to the field crew. They clean up and then report the problem. These 12 boxes down below are the people that we contact in case of a spill. They're not responsible for contacting each other. It was hard to graphically show how we contact. I mean, we have a pretty long list. So that's the people that we contact in case of a major spill.
Madam Mayor, You're missing one group. That's the City Council.
That's true.
Would be nice to be notified of these things when they happen.
That's true.
Correction noted.
Ms. Mayor?
Yes.
Just one more question. You were talking about ultimately that we'll be cleaning up all the parks that we're responsible for inside city limits. I'm thinking of some like state parks or the golf course that we don't directly supervise, yet how do we know they're getting cleaned up?
Very, very good point. In the situation that the satellite agency is how we define those, if they have more than a mile worth of facilities, which I believe the state parks does, then they are responsible for preparing their own plan, and then they're directly responsible to regional board for cleaning up and enforcing that plan. And another circumstance would be perhaps like the school district, or maybe let's say a large business in town. In that case, they would fall under our jurisdiction for spill reporting, spill cleanup. But even the smallest spill, even if a homeowner has a spill, we generally respond. We help ensure that the cleanup's done properly and safely. And then, if necessary, we will report that.
Now, what's the difference between the school district and state parks?
The length of their pipe.
It's
an arbitrary length of 1 mile or more.
Okay.
And I don't know specifically the school district. We've actually turned that question over to the regional board, and we're waiting a response from them.
Motion.
I believe the motion was to adopt the prepared elements of the sanitary sewer management plan, to approve the tentative schedule. I need to include the change to the element. I don't know where to do that at, if it's under 1, 2, or 3. I think it's under number 1.
I think it matters just...
Okay. That under the adopted prepared elements, that the last element, which is the WDR compliance, be amended to include the City Council at the appropriate place, to approve the tentative schedule, and to direct staff to prepare this plan in conjunction with the Public Works Advisory Board.
Second.
And then I would speak to this and assume that city staff and Public Works will take into consideration whatever input I'm sure that public will have, and that there'll be hearings and times for them to do that at the Public Works Advisory Board.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Thank you, Jim. Sorry we kept you so late. We got another one we're keeping, too. Okay, where were we? A4, Betty.
A4 is a resolution of the City Council adopting expense reimbursements. Now, this is where it overlapped a bit with our last item when we were talking about letterhead, and I think if you look under A on page 2 of 6, it talks about authorized expenses. Supplies includes letterhead and titles, and I'm not sure what titles is doing under there, if that could be explained to me, because I don't...
Which number is that?
It's under A on page 2 of 6. Mm-hmm. It's in the first paragraph under authorized expenses.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It says, city funds, equipment, supplies, titles, and staff time must only be used for authorized city business.
In other words, you can't say council member unless it's city business.
Well, I understand that, but how's that part of an expense item? I just didn't see how that fit.
I don't know.
Excuse me.
I think what the implication is, if I may, is if you're writing somebody and asking questions on behalf of your function here as a city council person, or you're making comment, that's an authorized use. But if you decide to write holiday letters to all your friends, you don't do it on letterhead. I think that's the whole thing.
You think that's what that is about?
Yes, yeah, sir. If you were a real estate agent, using your title on the real estate agent letterhead.
Okay.
So other than that, in other words, if you use letterhead, use it for city purposes, regardless of your position.
I see.
Is that your only comment?
As we have this list down here, 1 through 7, is this where we should include where we've given acknowledgments to people then? Because this becomes rather detailed, like recognizing service to the city. Do our city treasurers when we give them plaques? Does this come under this as well? And is that
those are authorized also?
And under what does that fall? I couldn't find it.
Well, I would say recognizing service to the city. That's what the community treasurer does.
Okay. So it's not just for city employees.
No.
Okay. I get that.
That was just an example.
Okay.
Now, this brings to mind another. If I used my city credit card to pay for the website for a year for Neighborhood Watch, but I'm going to take that out of discretionary funds because they had to have a credit card. So I had that conversation with Ms. Slayton and said, just take it out of my discretionary funds, but I'm putting it on the credit card.
And then I just wanted to make sure that under number 5, that says attending city events, that doesn't mean that, the city will pay for my spaghetti ticket to the spaghetti dinner, right?
No, but it would be the League of California Cities.
Right. Okay, so is that ambiguous there, or the sponsored events? So maybe we want to delete 5. I mean, I don't think it's appropriate for the city to pay for us to attend a city event.
Well, there may be some city event that it is appropriate, in which case the council would decide that first.
But here it's letting us do it without council approval.
Well, so you put the line after that with council approval.
Okay. Well, what, if we take it out, though, then we automatically have to come back to council approval.
If you do take it out, if that's not a policy you want to have, then it could still come back if someone felt that was a need to reimburse, because it says all other expenditures require prior approval of the city council. So if some city event was going to be done and council wanted the city to waive that fee or pay for that fee, I'm trying to think of one that if the Harbor Festival was a city event and wanted to pay for the entrance fee, then that could fall under that. So it might be a good idea to take it out because we don't have that type of stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to take that out.
That
all right. Betty wants to take out number five. Is everyone in agreement with that?
Yeah.
And then just curiously, this spending fee with the credit card and stuff, Mr. Schultz, is our city employees have the same kind of requirements? Is this along the same lines?
Even more cumbersome for the employees, but I think that's going to come back, and we're going to try to shorten it.
Okay.
But we would try to use as much language so there's that common sense.
Commonness. Yeah. Okay. Then when you're ready, I would move approval.
I got another question on attending city events. Would that? I'm wondering if the seminar that we're going to have, this team building seminar, would that come under that category, or would it not? Okay.
I bet that's an educational thing.
But we already approved it in advance anyway.
Okay. All right. Fine. Go ahead. Make the motion.
So then I would approve a resolution of the City Council of the City of Morbay adopting an expense reimbursement policy for elected and appointed officials as printed, excluding item number 5 under item A.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Item A6, Betty.
This is the parking management plan, and I think Mr. Teff raised three opinions and points, and I'd like those three addressed. I think that I wrote them down. It had to do with our own parking structures or parking lots.
Parking lots need to meet code.
Yeah, need to meet code.
And the parking.
The street ends included in this document. And already decided to leave the in lieu fees, as I recall from our joint meeting with the Planning Commission. But I don't know if we want to address at least number 2 and have that included back in. And do we need to address our own code violations?
I'd be happy to respond to all those if you like. Recognizing the parking areas in the middle of the Embarcadero, I don't know really what we're trying to do is get people away from the Embarcadero on the key periods of time and away from the central parks and get them to park on the flanks so that we can free the area up for pedestrians and make more efficient use of the parking on the periphery as opposed to bringing people in the middle where they're getting kind of congested. The second point he raised was the substandard parking facilities. We agree those facilities are in use now. What we're proposing is to put them into more effective and efficient use. It's really entirely a choice of the council. If we feel that the council feels that we have the financial resources and want to place them there, then we would support upgrading those parking lots. But right now, we're using those parking lots, and we're not really experiencing a lot of complaints about the condition of the parking lots or lack of landscaped areas and so forth. And lastly, this idea of endorsing the exclusive use of in-lieu funds and this idea of penalizing new businesses for paying new in-lieu funds, if you'll recall, one of the key provisions in the recently adopted zoning ordinance is that we grandfather existing businesses so that if they intensify their use, we would call it good if you went from something that generated more parking, then we would just say we call it good and say whatever parking they had was good at the time it was built, and they would only have to provide parking for the new square footage, and that's how we addressed this concept of dealing with existing buildings that have deficient parking. Those are the three questions that he raised, and in our last study session, I thought we focused on the parking spaces and would probably affect circulation to a certain extent. What we have is those parking lots have been parking lots for quite some time, and it's just one of these conditions that we deal with in older communities.
And those two particular parking lots are not, they're temporary, depending on what project we ultimately put in there.
But we've been using them for events, and we'll probably be using them more and more for events as long as they're there.
We have a project going.
As long as they're there.
Yeah. But the ones at Tidelands Park and Front Street, those I can see could use a little sprucing up. But do we have the money?
And I agree with Rob. There's nothing in here that prohibits us from doing that. We can do that at any time the council would like us to.
And then, like in Tidelands, you know, you certainly could. I think it talks about having those islands in between parking spaces, but you do get a lot of the boats down there, so you get that issue competing with. And I think that's why initially that wasn't landscaped further. No. Okay. But again, there's nothing that says you can't at any time look at those issues.
Melanie?
I'm very interested in finalizing this, and so I would like to say that I believe Rob is right, that at any point we can take those street ends on the Embarcadero by a resolution and change them into pocket parks.
I would like to add one thing here, though, that I thought we had talked about, and that's the timing for delivery trucks. I thought we had talked about 11 a.m. instead of 10, and the reason I say that is because having worked at a business down there that doesn't open until 10, you don't get your deliveries until after you open, and that would make it difficult for the business owner as well. And according to the report, business doesn't really pick up there until about 11 anyway when the lunch crowd starts arriving. So there's three indications of 10 o'clock being the end of delivery time, and I would think it would be more practical to move it up to 11.
We can add that to the resolution, or I could add an item that changes it to
11. Do I have support from council for that?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that's the only change we want to make then. And Betty, you want to do the motion on this one too?
I'd like to complete my statement.
I thought you were finished.
And that is that one of the things that I liked about the parking management plan was its discussion of shared parking as well. And I think that we need to remember that shared and grandfathered parking is a way of giving us flexibility that we decide those on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Just to clarify what Mr. Merritt said, some grandfathering in this document is not mandatory, but is a discretionary tool. Is that true, Mr. Ambo?
I believe that's what it says.
Okay, thanks.
Want to make a motion, Ben?
I recommend that the City Council adopt Resolution 48-07, approving the final parking management plan.
Second.
With the change of...
With the change of hours from 10 to 11 on the Embarcadero for delivery trucks.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Now, we'll get to Janine. Sitting over there waiting. Okay, C1. Consideration of cost and implementation issues related to changes in the trolley program for the 2008 season and adoption of a resolution, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you. At your June 25th City Council meeting, the Council considered recommendations from the parking management plan, which included a recommendation to separate the Route 1 downtown waterfront Embarcadero route, splitting it into two routes so that the headway could be shortened, as well as encouraging more people to ride the trolley from public parking areas that are near trolley stops outside of the waterfront area. The Council expressed support for expanding service to add a third trolley route dedicated along the Embarcadero, as described in the parking management plan, and reaffirmed this at the Joint City Council Planning Commission study session on September 17th. Tonight, the staff report is going to talk about the issues related to expansion, what would be needed. Three things, basically the acquisition of a new trolley for the expanded route, identifying a funding source for both the purchasing of the new trolley as well as ongoing operating costs for the additional service hours that would be required, And lastly, development of a new route for the Embarcadero and the downtown areas. The report tonight's going to deal with the first two, and the routing will come to council at a later date once it's developed. And it would probably will be taking it to the Public Works Advisory Board as well to get input from them as well as the public before a proposed route would come to the council. With regard to capital costs for the new trolley, the city would be pursuing grant funding to cover the majority, if not 100% of the funding. Currently, there are two transit grant programs available in November, December, for which the city could apply for an application for funding. The first being the Rural Transit Fund cycle. It's an annual grant that is available to the city. With regard to vehicle acquisition, we would also need to go through an invitation to bid process since there is no, currently there are no trolleys available through the state of California contract procurement process where the state goes through the bid process and we can piggyback on that. This process can take between 2 to 3 months for development of the bid, bid process as well as going through it. In addition, manufacture and vehicle delivery, once a vehicle is ordered, depending on the queue for the manufacturer and their production schedule, could take between 6 to 8 months. At the September study session, there was mention by a council member regarding purchasing an electric trolley. Alternative fuel trolleys do cost more money, but there is funding available through various grants that we can we could apply for. The local match would then be higher, but there's also other cost implications associated with it, such as repair and maintenance impacts, potential infrastructure depending on the type of alternative fuel path that is decided, and potentially any new federal or state regulations that come into play. And these are things that the city would need to research and evaluate before deciding on an alternative fuel path. And given the timeline for the grant funding, at this point, we're not recommending that we look into that for this new trolley, but for subsequent trolley purchases for replacement replacement engines or vehicles. Sorry. As grant funding applications are due within the next month, as I mentioned, we're going to look at this more for the future than for this third trolley. With regard to operating costs for the expanded trolley service, approximately 584 vehicle service hours would be added to the existing service at an estimated cost of $20,058 per year. And as I have already mentioned, the city uses 100% of its Transportation Development Act funds on our Dial-A-Ride program, and so operating costs have been coming from the general fund. There are offsets from fares, from selling advertising spaces and rentals of the 1985 trolley, and we'd be able to do the same for the third trolley as well. However, since the parking and lieu funds can be used for public transit facilities that provide access to parking per the municipal code, staff is recommending that the additional operating costs associated with adding the third route as recommended in the parking management plan come from the parking and lieu funds. So with that, staff is recommending that the council do three things. Authorize staff to use the 1985 trolley for the third route. It's currently the backup until for the 2008 season until such time as a new vehicle can be purchased and made ready to go into service. Authorize staff to pursue grant funding to purchase the new trolley for the third route. And lastly, to adopt Resolution 49-07, authorizing parking and lieu funds be used for the parking management plan recommendation for trolley expansion as outlined in the staff report. With that, I'd like to turn it over to council for any questions or in comment and action.
Questions for Jenny? Betty?
I have three questions. Are we applying for any other vehicles during or use of that money in the 2008 budget?
For the 1B or the Rural Transit Fund?
For the Rural Transit Funds.
The Rural Transit Funds, we would be applying for the new trolley. I should back up for a moment. In talking with Pete Rogers at the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, I was asking if we could use one grant as the local match for the other. And because they're coming from two different funding sources, he indicated that that could be done. So we're going to actually be applying for both 1B and Rural Transit Fund monies for the new trolley.
But are we applying for any other vehicles? Like, do we need a new dial-a-ride vehicle? Or
yes, there will be one new dial-a-ride vehicle. There are currently two that have been grant-funded in the past and are on order right now. The other two vehicles that we would be looking at would be replacement trolleys. We're looking at 10-year life cycle for the trolley, so the 1999 trolley that we bought would come around in 2009, so we'd be applying for Rural Transit Fund monies at that point, as well as 1B money for that future year. And then the 2003 trolley we would be applying for as well.
So will a dial-a-ride vehicle be in competition with the trolley for money?
They would be in competition with each other, as well as whatever other applications are submitted, both from the city and from the county.
Okay. And how often is the 1985 trolley used as a sub when the other two trolleys go out?
You're talking as a backup or for the rentals?
As the backup.
As the backup, it doesn't happen very often. We're very fortunate to have a maintenance staff who keeps the vehicle, because it is difficult. Well, for the first year when you're using the old trolley, there's no advertising railings on there. So we couldn't sell advertising space on the third trolley, the 85 trolley, for the 2008 season. Once you get the new trolley in service, it would have that capability to sell the advertising spaces. So in future years, there would be offsets for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions for Janine? No? Rick?
Yeah, thanks. We spoke earlier. I just want clarification on something. Of course, the new trolley can't be used for rentals because of stipulations with the grant money. But the one trolley, the 85, can be rented, and can the other also?
There's a federal, an FTA regulation, Federal Transit Administration regulations, prohibiting the use of federal funds for charters, what they call charters or rentals. The 1985 trolley was purchased with general funds, so it's the city's position that it would not be in violation of that chartering rule. The 99 and the 2003 trolleys did have federal funds used for the purchase, so we don't rent those two out. It's only the 1985 trolley.
You just have one for rent.
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. Discussion? Yeah, I'll start.
It's really disappointing to me, actually, this plan to buy another gasoline vehicle, especially for what we're doing, something brand new. So I would suggest that we run the 85 trolley on this brand new route to see how it works, how it goes down there. And then I would suggest to council that the staff report on page 2 about how awful these electric vehicles are. As you know, I ride an electric scooter, and I also drive a hybrid. The hybrid needs spark plugs at 110,000 miles. See, they don't have moving parts. They aren't hard to maintain. They don't cost you they cost you way less than anything else. So what I'd like to do is to experiment with the third trolley and see how that works before I go and spend $156,000 on another gasoline vehicle and have it kind of sitting, waiting with the traffic while everyone's standing there inhaling it. So I'm not going to vote to support this except for the first part of the plan. I think it would be good for us to wait, do a little research. I'll get the research done for you. I've already today contacted APCD and the C5 Coalition to ask them for help on this research about getting me a hybrid or an electric trolley. I don't want to do it this year if we haven't found it, and I don't think it's easy to find. I'll admit that. But I think I would like to put some people on to finding it for next year.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
The trolleys we buy are basically on truck chassis. And they take a truck with an engine and put a trolley body on it. I'm sure you can get electric because they use at least one in Santa Barbara, and I think they use more than one. And quite frequently when my son was riding that electric trolley, they'd have to stop at one end of the route or the other and let the thing cool off before they could start again. Because it's and they're very heavy because they're full of batteries. I would not support an electric vehicle. If somebody makes a big truck that's a hybrid or an alternative fuel, I would at least consider that. But electric vehicles, while they're a great buzzword, are not practical when you have... You know, look at the problems we had with those two vehicles we had. We had people running out of electricity between here and San Luis Obispo. We had to build expensive 220-volt little things to charge them with, and nobody has yet convinced me that it doesn't take more energy to build the batteries than you'll ever save. So I could support looking for something alternative coming down the road, but to me, an electric vehicle that's going to run all day is not going to be practical.
Ready?
I tend to agree that I'm not ready to put a dial-a-ride in competition with the trolley. I think the dial-a-ride is more important to our community, given the nature of our community. And so I would be glad to do the 85 for next year and see how that goes. I'd like for staff to come back with documentation on passenger capacity, the use of it. And I'd like to see that, and because we're changing routes, I think we need to do that kind of a study and to see if it's being efficient and effective. And so I'm willing to do number one, and I'm more than willing to wait on number two as well, and which means I guess we wouldn't be doing number three.
I have a question of staff.
Okay,
we're talking about applying for the grants this November, and running the 85 for the 2008 season with the idea that it's going to take time to do an RFP and go through all of that stuff and then have it built. So we're looking at running a new trolley if we get it. If you get somebody that has a problem, then we have to go find a dial-a-ride bus or something in order to do that. So running the 85 is a good stopgap, but you can't do it forever because it's not... In this day and age, it doesn't make it.
You know, when we talked about this at the Businessmen's Forum, the businessmen were very much in favor of it and said they'd be glad to come up with the money for it. But I haven't seen any of it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure it's timely then. Maybe we're not ready to do this.
Well, I'm wondering, too, if the trolley were, and maybe it is all that's available, but is the trolley, as we see our trolleys, is that the only option available to us? Are there perhaps other vehicles that are used in resort places that are perhaps more energy efficient, perhaps a little smaller? We don't need it to be huge.
You're going to have more people on the waterfront one than you are. I think there are more people
than a dial-a-ride bus
would handle.
I understand that, but if also could be running, it's a short route. It's going to run more often. So, is that something that we should research before we make a decision?
I think that's a good idea, that we look at other alternatives to the type of vehicle, too.
Right.
I think it's
right.
True.
Does it have to be that?
Well, and the point about the size of the vehicle, I think, is important as well. I mean, do we have I know we have documentation, do we not, on how many riders there are per hour?
Yes, we have by route, by hour passenger counts.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe we can get by with a smaller vehicle.
Mm-hmm. If I may, we traditionally use the trolleys because to date they've been almost like an attraction as well as transportation.
Understand that, yeah.
And I don't know, you can't do a tram, they're too open and exposed. You could do something that looks like a school bus, but that's sure going to get people interested. I don't know what's in between.
I don't either, but that I'm kind of thinking with the revolution that we're having right now in vehicles, and maybe it's worth just a little research anyway to see if there's something else.
So are we going to put this whole thing on hold, or you want?
I think we could.
Well, she's got to know by November.
Well, yeah, as far as grants.
I mean, we can drag our feet and just forget the whole thing.
Well, we can apply. The deadline for the B1 isn't in November also, is it?
It was originally scheduled for November 1st, then it was moved back to November 9th, and at the COG board meeting last Wednesday, staff was recommending early December now.
Do we have to specify that it's for a trolley, or can we specify that it's for a vehicle to transport tourists?
You'd need to say.
The project description... You would need to have a project description that is pretty clear about what the funding would be for, whether it's for a trolley, a light transit bus, a dial-a-ride type bus, because part of the criteria for eligibility is a 10-year useful life. So for right now, our trolleys, FTA life cycle is 10 years. So we would need to be specific in the grant application process as to what the funding would be used for. We can't leave it kind of vague. Okay. Just to kind of back up to vehicle size, they do make trolleys that are smaller than the ones that we have, that are we're at like 32 passenger vehicles. They make them, I think, as small as 20.
And are they cheaper?
They would be cheaper, but I couldn't tell you offhand by how much.
Bruce is anxious to say something.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to add that this was probably one of the most well-received components and recommendation of the parking management plan, and got positive feedback from all of the advisory boards, because that was something that we were recommending. And I really think the concept of us not going forward with this, especially with the business community, would be something they'd be interested in and probably have quite a bit to say about. The charm about this was the trolley ride itself, and we were really seriously hoping to make a big impact as soon as possible. That's why we timed the installation of the directional signage and the trolley routes for next year, so that we could try and get a big bang quickly. This is a quick fix, and we think it's going to be a success. We're going to have, by the time this comes online, we should have the Harbor Walk completed. We'll have the trolley going with 15-minute headways from the Rock to Tidelands Park all day and all night, or most of the evening, during our peak periods. So,
and it's really, I guess, two separate issues. Yes, it is the 85 trolley. Yes, it is old. Yes, it is not ADA compliant. But it's two separate issues. Remember to do the 85 trolley, implement that, and use parking in lieu funds instead of general fund monies to make that happen. And then the other issue is the grant fund issue, which deals with, I'm assuming the reason you don't want to go forward with that might be because there might be some other alternative fuel. There's nothing that says you can't apply for a grant and then receive it and turn it down later on if you really didn't want that trolley. So my recommendation would be to do the two, and we can still
look at it, have it in your mailboxes, and then come in, and then we would have an intelligent decision to make then.
Well, I think it's a good idea to pursue the grant anyway, with what Janine said, you know, go for the top amount, and then, you know, if we decide we don't want to do it, we can always say no. It's a little hard to, after the fact, say, I want it.
I'll put the slaves on it tomorrow, though.
Okay. Any other comments?
If we do go for another vehicle, I'd really like to see it as a smaller vehicle. I rarely see the trolley filled, and I think that's a waste of energy, per se, and probably whatever.
And smaller is cuter, so that's good. Hopefully more efficient. Okay, so then our motion, who wants to try a motion here?
I have a question first, if we may. I have no objection to a smaller vehicle, but I would like to make sure that by encouraging traffic to move out, we're going to increase ridership on a trolley. Because right now, a lot of people ride it just because it's fun. But if they are required or urged to park out in the outlying areas and ride the trolley, my fear is I don't want to get a trolley that's so small that we fill it up and tell people they have to wait another 15 minutes for the thing to come back. I would like to figure out some way of trying to forecast how many people will ride it at any one time and make sure it will handle that.
I think we can do that with, because I know Janine keeps good statistics, but my picture
but
was
changing.
To put, I understand that, but my picture was to put the smaller trolley on the state parks and put the bigger trolleys in the town.
Well, that may be a possibility, too, although they may want to change the routes. Who's to say that the downtown trolley won't do the state park, and then the other route will just go out to the north end? I mean, that's something you have to work on.
Surely. Well, then maybe we need to make it wait to make the decision.
So I just don't want to – I don't want to specify size.
Okay. Let's get it first, and then we'll worry about where it goes. Can I hear a motion? Anybody want to try one? Or shall I? Okay, I'm going to move that we authorize staff to use the 1985 trolley for the third route for 2008 and to pursue grant funds and purchase a new trolley for the third route. And do we want to go for the third one, authorizing the parking and the funds? Okay, we'll just leave it at those two.
Well, then you don't have funding for it.
I'm sorry.
Then you
don't
have
funding.
That is the funding out of the parking and lieu.
That's how you drive the trolley.
Okay, that's the main, operations. So, okay. And adopt Resolution 49-07 authorizing parking and lieu funds to be used for the
trolley expansion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, 3-2. All right. Thank you, Janine. And we've done D1. And I think all we have left is future agenda. Anybody have future agenda item?
A couple of things. I have a concern, and I don't know if this is a reconsideration, but last meeting we approved to do a study on a property that we don't own, down on the Dendulk property that actually belongs to Dynergy. And previously, when the Harbor Master asked that with Ms. Luker that they joined their two planning areas, I believe part of that property really isn't under city jurisdiction. This is the second time we've done that this year. We agreed to do a study on property where the water tanks are up on Nutmeg, and I'm questioning the wisdom of that when we don't even own the property. And so I don't know how to get at that or how one addresses that, if this is not an agenda item or if it's something else.
It would have to be a reconsideration of that item, and I don't remember how the vote was and how it would go at this point in time.
I could bring it up for reconsideration.
Mm. Okay. That's probably the best thing to do, then.
Okay. I would like to do that, then.
Is there a majority that wants to bring that back?
I'm not sure what it is we're talking about.
It was the master enhancement plan for that area down where the boatyard haul out would be, and the Dynergy, the Dendulk property. We own a large portion of it, but there is a portion of that project that will be looked at that is not within city ownership.
If I may ask a question, Madam Mayor, but anytime we're interested in buying or stealing or whatever property, we have to have it appraised, don't we?
Yes.
This is beyond appraisal, though. I'm actually making plans for the development of that area. So it probably goes back to we're starting to discuss it. So I don't know if there's, what do you need, three people for reconsideration?
Yeah. And I mean, we master plan the whole boardwalk down there without property. So, and sometimes it is a master schedule that at some point, a master plan that at some point in time you would have to make sure you have ownership before the project goes forward. But many times you do master planning without having the ownership and seeing where, if the project fits within your own area that you own. I think they're going to be looking at to see if they can fit it within the property we own, but that might not really.
We have to begin work on the housing element, and we're going to be drafting the neighborhood compatibility standards and doing work on the housing element. The housing element does have a time frame, but we're going to bring that back within the next couple months.
So you're saying within four meeting times?
That's what our target is. Right now we've got one planner working, and we're going to have one planner working for the next 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So,
But when you say begin that process, I'm
that means drafting code and then going to the Planning Commission. And
right,
beginning,
which means we won't see it till after the first of the year, right. The neighborhood compatibility standard.
Well, it matters on how quickly it goes through the Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm. Highly unlikely given the holiday schedule, but it will be started. And the first public hearings are going to be at the Planning Commission level.
I guess I'm still asking that it be agendized before the end of the year to the City Council. I guess I want to see it as a priority.
I don't see how you can see it any other way. It is a priority. There's just a number of things we're dealing with, and mm-hmm. We're really 50% short on our planning staff.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're asking is that we not wait for the Coastal Commission to send back our documents.
Oh, no.
We're
not waiting either.
Okay.
No, we're going to draft code anyway. We're going to go with it. We're moving in parallel on about 8 different fronts. I'm just trying to tell you that's one of the 8. So,
so the Planning Commission is going to see it before the end of the year for sure.
That is our intent, yes.
Okay.
And I think that's a reasonable goal. And they're also going to see the housing element. And that's when a lot of this discussion really is germane to the concept of housing. So, but
all right. Does anybody else?
Then is our ordinance then that covers the 2,500 square feet good until this comes back?
That'll come back for the public hearing at your next meeting to extend that moratorium.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else have future agenda items? No? Okay, Rick? You have a quote for tonight?
I sure do. It is my goal to one day be half as wonderful a person as my dog thinks I am.
With that, we're adjourned.